This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca on a Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day. The Montreal Alouettes in town to help kick off week six with your Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day. Pre-game coverage starts at 5:30 today. Darren Bomming, Troy Westwood, Chris Walby. We'll be with you, of course, right up until 11 a.m. when Mr. Kevin Olszewski will take over and tee up the game as well. Hustler will be back for the Gondola Pizza warm-up at 2, and of course he and Paul Edmonds will carry you through to 5:30 in the Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day with the afternoon ride at 3 o'clock. Lots to get to today. This morning, the Gold Cup ended last night. The Jays have won 3 in a row. The Bombers are getting set for the game tonight. Connor McDavid spoke, and when Connor McDavid speaks, people listen. RBC Canadian Open gets underway, and of course, it is a game day. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki with you. Westy, welcome back.
Thanks, man. 10 rested and ready, boys. Had the tarp off all day yesterday some yard stuff.
Yes.
Putting the pool up, hauling stuff around, thinking of you guys wood. As I was, you know, dripping sweat and all
chopping
kinds of
wood, digging
sexy
holes.
Type things.
Just making a difference in the world.
That's
right. It took 30 seconds before you became an idiot. That was awesome.
Hey, by the way, at Super Spike, Darren Cameron from the Bombers came over to me at the main stage. I saw him walking down the hill as I was introducing a band. The music started. I came off the stage, and he's like, hey. I went over there. He goes, tarp's staying on today. And it's offensive. And it only comes off because it's hot. And I'm like, take it easy. So it is a Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day. How are you, Mr. Rewicki? Are you all ready? Are you're more prepared after your statement yesterday of being unprepared?
Yes and no.
That stuff catches up to you. Depends who's listening.
Yeah. I'll be fine. But not packed at all. Haven't packed anything. Leave in about 28 hours. But I have completely immerse myself in which sandwich shops are must visits in each of the locales I'll be visiting. So the important thing is taken care of. I'll just get the clothes ready tomorrow.
That's an awesome trip you're on, man. That's going to be great fun.
He was telling us yesterday that he didn't realize he leaves Friday and not Saturday.
He told me first thing this morning,
Actually, so. I should mention, I forgot to tell you this yesterday, but in Ireland, not where I'll be staying, but pretty nearby, there's a course, I think it's in Kilkenny, but I'll double-check it. And it's actually the sister course of Pine Ridge.
Really?
And if you're a member of Pine Ridge, and you go over the pond to this little Irish town, you can golf for free.
What?
I'll look up the course name and everything. But yeah, I was showing they come over to this side every year or every 2 years for the Ridger, where the Irish battle the Canadians at Pine Ridge.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, I'll check up the name. It was pretty wild, though. Like I could legitimately drive out to a course in Ireland and play around for free.
No kidding. That's awesome. And not because you're on the Big Show. Which doesn't get me many other than our home course, Glendale, which is looking sweet and fine as well this summer. Let's get into the Minuke Denture Blue Bomber game day. Lots have been said about the fake punt, the fashion which the Bombers have lost, and everything that went on around the 42 points that wasn't enough for the Bombers to get a win in BC. They are 2-2. They are hosting the Montreal Alouettes tonight, and Montreal brings with it a good defense, a good run game, and some unknowns, but a 2-3 record. They've put up 101 points. They've given up 109. Winnipeg has scored 128 points, given up 139. This will be an interesting one, but one I feel that the Winnipeg Blue Bombers need to win and win at home and continue that statement of trying to build a better than 500 record at home. How do you see this one so far?
Yeah, it's a sizable game. I think what's most important, though, as far as you know, the amount of weight on this game is that you've got to win two of your next three here. You play three Eastern teams consecutively, and to come out of this entire spell being a 4-3 would be a decent place to be, and I think a reasonable ask when you got three games upcoming against Western opponents. The thing about the sneaky thing about Montreal is they came out of the gate pretty slow. I remember watching that week one game and Darian Durant, they were just out of sync a little bit. But in their games so far this year, this is what they've done for net yards as each week has gone by. 272, 334, 427, 493. And Darian Durant throwing's gone 166, 245, 296, and 452. So they are, whether it's time of possession or yards, Montreal is surging here as an offense, and they've got the toughest defense in the land, where they're averaging only giving up 21.8 points per game. And, of course, that's going to clash mightily with Winnipeg being the second highest scoring team, putting up 32 points per game. So it's a very intriguing matchup in that way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting if you get 3 weeks of Darian Durant to start the year, the last 2 weeks, and it's, you know, you have to kind of take it a grain of salt with who they've played to, and I mean, early on they played the Western teams a little bit, and then they've moved on to, I believe it was Ottawa the last week, where they really went off in a big way, but I mean, to be fair, they also beat Calgary, and they beat them fairly handily too, as well at home. So it's a tough one for the Bombers, but it's one they have to win, because anytime you face an Eastern opponent this season, I think you have to be able to, like Troy said, I think 2 out of 3 is the bare minimum, and especially when it's at home. On the road, maybe you could afford to lose one here or there, but this one at home you have to grab, and especially when, you know, Montreal, you know, if we're going to maybe say Toronto might end up with the best record, I still think Ottawa will eventually turn things around. But Montreal, in a way, is a team they're probably battling with for a playoff spot, because it's going to be tough for the Bombers to grab one of the top three spots in the West. They'll likely be a crossover team this year. So to, you know, kind of take down Montreal early in the season, you know, in a way, it's really similar to a facing a Western team, where these guys are directly competing with you for a playoff spot.
Are you guys, this is the Big Show on TSN 1290. We're teeing up a Minuk Dintre Blue Bomber game day on TSN 1290 between the Bombers and the Owls. Are you guys happy with Matt Nichols so far?
Yeah, I would say happy with him. The only concern is that over the last few games here, I've seen some monumental errors. Think of the pick six that he threw late in that game against, was it Calgary, that sort of sealed the deal. And then you look at that interception last week, which was just an absolute atrocity with 1:21 left, where he just laid it into the arms and kind of sealed the deal for BC in that game. So, yeah, I'm not disappointed in what he's done. I guess I would say that he, you know, we were wondering early on this season, there was talk right across the country for fans of the CFL, is what kind of guy is Nichols? Is he simply a game manager, or is he someone that can rise to a level above that and join the elite in the CFL? And I'll say that has sort of stalled that journey, or that where he's trying to climb to. I don't think he's done himself any favors in joining that conversation that he's amongst the elite in the CFL. In what we've seen, he's just sort of hovering there and needs to take that next step in a hurry.
Yeah, I would, if I had to pick a word to describe it, it would probably be meh. Like, it's been, you've had your ups and you've had your downs, and has he been bad? No, but has he, you know, blown your doors off? Not really. Not yet, at least. I mean, you'd look at the week one game in Saskatchewan where the Bombers' offense, you know, through the second and third quarter was just a juggernaut. It was unstoppable. But since then, you know, the passing numbers kind of leave a little bit to be desired. But, yeah, I don't know so far. It's been all right. But I agree with Troy where, I mean, since that week one game, 267, 228, 254, that's not enough in the CFL. You need to see a little bit more from Matt Nichols there, and three picks in those three games. That's kind of the main number for me. I can live with 275 through the air every single game, but if it's going to be a pick a game, something like that, you know, especially with the way the Bombers' defense has been, that's just not good enough. And he does have to take another step for this team to kind of reach that, I don't know, 11-7, 12-6 mark, because right now 2-2, He's playing like a 500 quarterback.
Yeah, and that's what I came to the conclusion yesterday when looking at this game, that they're 2-2. I'm satisfied with what the team's done, and I'm satisfied with Matt Nichols, but I'm not happy with him. Like, I need to see him, and I think this is the game. I'm not saying that he's been terrible or needs to be better or this or that. What I'm saying is, at 2-2 and at this point of the season, with Montreal coming in with this defense, tonight is a big game for me for Matt Nichols. I need to see him control the ball, and I need him to do the things he does well, spread it out over the course of the game. I would like to see what he does when he's putting up his yardage in the first quarter and the fourth quarter. I need to see him control the game, and that could be if they get the running game going. Like, I just need him to see the offense. Like, you made the great point, Troy, against Toronto. They didn't score in the fourth quarter, but he, you know, moved the ball, moved the chains, controlled the possession, and helped win that game. I want to see more of that from Matt Nichols. I think at 2-2, and I didn't like the pick against BC, and I voiced that. I understand the yards he's put up, and he's helped and been instrumental in the two wins they have. Could have been three wins. I just want to see it spread out more and more consistent, and see his development. It's week six now. It's their fifth game of the year, and I would like to see more out of them consistently throughout the game to be, like, happy with it.
Yeah, and maybe some of that is their level of struggle in the first and fourth quarter specifically, right? Like, they come out of the gate super slow, stumbling. They're really having trouble catching traction early on. And then the situation in the fourth quarter, they have not scored a touchdown yet in the fourth quarter, the Bombers have not. And just to sort of add on to that for a certain level of concern here is that they've been outscored 42-9 in the fourth quarter. This was an issue before the BC game where they were shut out 18-0. So right now, like, starting out slow is one thing. And obviously with three quarters to follow, you've got all kinds of time to catch up to that. And the Bombers do a pretty solid job in the second and third quarter. I can dismiss early game struggles. And no, they're not ideal. They put you behind the eight ball to some degree. But you can recover from that. There's no recovering crap in the bed in the fourth quarter. So I'm really going to emphasize the fourth quarter here. And hey, we all know nobody thinks or remembers of what Tom Brady does in the first quarter, right? Same Doug Flutie, pick your fantastic quarterback. Who gives a rat's fanny what they do in the first quarter? It's about the fourth quarter, baby. And when the Bombers have yet to get a touchdown and, in fact, are getting outscored 42-9, just getting decimated in that fourth quarter. To me, that's where he really needs to shine here. Like, the team in a larger scope, and hey, fair or unfair, when you're the quarterback, right, this is part of the gig, part of the nature of that position. You get a lot of the attention, whether it's just or not, and he's got to put this team on his shoulders, specifically the offense, and you got to get it done in the fourth quarter.
And that's exactly how I feel. Like, I'm not unhappy with it. I agree with you about the out of the gate. You're going to have your, you know, you're trying to get some consistency and build some things that you worked on all through training camp. But to me, tonight's that night. Like, to me, it's week six. It's your fifth game of the year. I want to see a little bit more out of you. I want to see you manage some things. I don't have a problem. It's the Canadian Football League. It's going to happen with three or four straight two and outs. But when it gets to five and six, and not getting a first down in the fourth quarter when you really need one, like parts of the game where you might not be putting up points, but you're keeping the ball, you're moving the chains. I want to see more of that, and I want to see it consistently throughout the game. I do want to see more in the first quarter, and I definitely want to see more in the fourth, and I want to see some of it spread out more so that, you know, throughout these parts of the game, there's not those fourth quarters where it's six straight two and outs and then a pick. And
that's very close to what it was in that game against BC.
Yeah.
They had six drives or six series in a row, starting with their final one in the third quarter, where over in six drives, they had zero first downs and two turnovers. So that is just an absolute catastrophic way to finish games. And that, obviously, you're not going to we're talking 500. The team won't finish 500 if they continue that level of struggle in fourth quarters.
Yeah, and you know what? With the way they come out of the gate, out of the halftime, and the way they play in the third quarter, I just don't think that's going to continue. I think they will eventually find some traction in the fourth. The problem is right now their mistakes are amplified because I think, critically, this defense can't stop anyone at all when it comes to late in the game. So every single time the Bombers offense can't move the ball, it bites them in the ass because their defense is allowing 400-plus passing yards a game, it seems like.
Well, and you don't think they stopped Toronto in that fourth quarter at home?
Toronto so far has been the outlier. Through five games, they did a decent job late in the game against the Argos, I'll give you that. But each of the four other games, they've been absolutely horrible when it comes to slowing teams down late.
Yeah, and I guess what we're all talking about, whether it's Matt Nichols or the defense, or so, you want to see something expanded from the team and a more consistent play throughout the four quarters. And I think it's time. Like, you would know better than us, Troy, just about that. At this point of the season, some of the things should start getting better for the team that they do well, and some of the things they don't do well should start getting fixed, I would think, by the fifth game of the year.
And that's across the board, right? That's a relative shared thing that should happen as teams gel and come together. The scary thing a little bit here is that when you're talking personnel, much more so offensively than defensively because of some of the injuries and changes, the offense shouldn't be searching for themselves in week five here. You can understand in Montreal, right, when Darian Durant arrives and he's adjusting to a whole new sequence of, as far as playbook goes, getting down with the OC, all those sorts of things, you knew dang well that that was going to take some time to catch traction. But this offense should be a well-oiled machine, right? You got the same OC, you've got the same quarterback coach, everything up and down. There's all kinds of cohesion and familiarity here with these guys to lean on. There shouldn't be this level of struggle late in games that we've seen here by the offense.
We'll have more of the Bombers at the bottom of the hour, and we'll hear some audio. We're also going to tee up, or at least rank, who we think, in order, has the best forwards in the Central Division. Coming up at 7 o'clock in the Royal Sports Power Hour. Up next, so the Jays win three in a row and do it in dramatic fashion. We'll discuss that on the Big Show, TSN 1290 next.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. Our top 10 list of Manitobaville finalists have been revealed. To learn more about each community and their intended project, visit our website, then text in your vote. For your favorite standard message rates, apply for text entry requests. Full details for each community and how to vote can be found at tsn1290.ca. Cutoff for voting is Friday, August 4th at noon. Whoever receives the most votes will receive the $25,000 grand prize. Winner will be revealed on Tuesday, August the 8th. The Big Show on TSN 1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And gentlemen, the Jays have won three in a row. It's against the Oakland A's, of course. They were down 2-0 going into the ninth, and Josh Donaldson led off the bottom of the ninth inning. And Josh Donaldson, in the previous 10 games, hitting 134, takes a leadoff walk. Justin Smoke continues his career year, hitting his 28th bomb of the season to tie it. And then the next batter up, on the next pitch thrown, Kendrys Morales crushes one to win the game in dramatic fashion, 3-2. The Jays have won three in a row. And then Twitter was amazing because people started to believe again. And there was the other people who did not believe, like our good friend Ian Mendez from TSN 1200, saying if they weren't eight games back of the division, this would be more exciting. However, it is exciting and dramatic in what they've done last night. Great way to win a ball game, but doesn't mean anything to you. They've won three in a row and they're eight games back.
Doesn't mean a damn thing to me, man. I mean, maybe they can double this, right? Double this, and then you'll start to get excited. But I dare say right now it just sort of sets up as fool's gold. But it is, they're having fun. Looks like they're having fun last night, certainly. But it can't really commit to the emotional investment and getting excited to this team, because they've put themselves in such a hole that three in a row means jack squat at this point in time. They got to go 6, 8, 10 before they can start to make some noise again.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it was a ton of fun watching it, but then the good feelings kind of leave you, I don't know, 5, 10 minutes after the back-to-backs happen, because, I mean, look, they could win 10 in a row after having won their past three in a row, and they would need the Royals to go 3-7 in their next 10 just to break even with Kansas City. Plus, that doesn't include everything the teams in front of them do. I think there's 5 or 6 teams, you know, ahead
seven
of them
in the wild card.
Yeah, so that's just ahead of the playoff line, right? Mm-hmm. So it's there's just too many teams, not enough time. I mean, enjoy it. It's great to see Justin Smoke continue his outstanding year, but other than that, it's just, you know, it's kind of a brief moment of elation in a season that's just, unfortunately, is just kind of slowly being flushed down the drain.
Sorry, six teams in front of him in the wild card. It's, you know, and I'm not buying into this either. I think it's too big of a hurdle to climb, and they just, with Sanchez out and everything they're struggling with, I don't see them putting this together. However, it continues to keep an eye on the Major League Baseball non-waiver trade deadline that comes up Monday at 3 p.m. If they go today at noon with Marcus Stroman on the mound, if they sweep Oakland, they have the Los Angeles Angels coming in for a weekend series, and then they go into Monday. And I don't know, like if they were... What ifs are something we discuss in sports, which mean nothing. But say they win the Boston series three games instead of splitting that. Say they take two of three in Cleveland instead of getting swept. Say they're six games back right now. Then say going into Monday they're five. Does that change anything you do in the mind of management, or is this just me going what if, what if, what if?
Yeah, I don't think short term, like such remarkable short term sort of. I have a little bit of trouble believing Shapiro is going to be influenced by the level of success they can attain over the next three, four, five, six types of games. You know, he's got to be, I would think, more in a long play sort of a situation here. And the big question is, if you are intrigued and you're not willing to give away potential cornerstones of your franchise along the lines of Donaldson, even Stroman, I know with his size and all the rest of it, but you're not willing to give away guys like that can still carry you, but you're going to make smaller moves here with a Hap or with a Batista, whomever else. What are those guys really going to bring back to you that's going to be impactful anytime soon? I don't really think, you know, the more I listen and read about this, I'm just starting to think less and less that they're going to do anything profound along the lines of what we saw from AA here, when he'd shake things up and you'd see, you know, a big player, a bunch of players going back and forth here. I just think it's going to be sort of a quiet, meek situation come trade deadline time.
But, go good.
Yeah, yeah, no, I sorry, agree. The big moves in the off season. That's how it's going to work here. Estrada and Batista. I mean, you just kind of hope you get a diamond in the rough prospect that pans out of nowhere, because you're not getting much of a return.
We'll get back into a Manuk Denture Blue Bomber game day and hear from the Bombers next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes towards select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you can be one of the recipients. To enter, just take a really, 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 really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. Showing this amazing photo or take a theme selfie in one of five bonus categories. Those bonus categories and your selfie could be worth $1,000. Those include Best Animal Selfie, presented by Assiniboine Park Zoo. Best Smile Selfie, presented by Toddlers to Teens. Best Food and Drink Selfie, presented by Booster Juice. Best Hair Selfie, presented by Aura Hair Group. And Best Outdoor Selfie, presented by Lacoste Garden Center. The Selfie of the Summer, however, presented by Robertson College, could net you $5,000. For more information, visit TSN1290.ca. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. 34 minutes past the hour. Going to be smoking hot today and less of a breeze than yesterday. 30 above. Mm. It's going to feel like 34.
Feels like that in the studio right now. It's like a tropical rainforest of humidity in here, man.
It is humid in here.
Tarps off in the studio.
Here we go. I can't get mine off. I'm going to leave it on. Too tired. Not too tired, actually. I just can't get it over the girth, we'll call it.
Are those pipes?
Painting a picture here on the radio. Drink it in. Stop it. It's a Manuk Denture Blue Bomber game day. Al's in town. We were discussing Mr. Matt Nichols and head coach Mike O'Shea yesterday, after the walkthrough for the team in preparations for the Montreal Alouettes, was asked if Nichols is playing his best football yet this year.
The hope is that nobody on our team has played their best football yet. You know, the hope is that they get better and better each and every day and each and every week. I mean, that's, you know, one of the things as a pro athlete you need to work for and push for is to improve. Some of it, you know, a lot of it at this level isn't physically improving because, you know, they're in the best shape of their lives the day before training camp, you know, and then from there it's a lot of managing, right? So the idea really at this level is to get smarter and smarter and one play better, you know, every single week.
And that's, I guess, what I was saying is I'm looking not just for Matt Nichols, but specifically I was focusing on him to see that evolve tonight against Montreal.
And you're saying what to evolve?
Some consistency and some overall, you know, I guess a step being taken forward here. I would like to see, you know, some improvement in, you know, not only his play, but the offense and some consistency throughout the entire game. I think, I'm aware it's a game of momentum and there's ups and downs. But to me, that has to start leveling off and to see some general consistency out of Matt Nichols as a starting quarterback.
And yet, we're talking about the number two scoring offense in the CFL with 32 points per game. Right? There was a time not very long ago that we would have freaked out, basically, to have heard that level of success. So it's, you know, it's an interesting thing here a little bit, isn't it? I tell you what, the offense isn't the problem to me. I know that they haven't scored a touchdown in the fourth quarter, but if you're going to choose, if I have to pick what my largest concern here with the Bombers, it is no question about it whatsoever still defensively. You just can't. The Bombers' defense puts the offense in a situation of, like it or not, you're in a track meet, baby. Right? You gotta. They're putting up 32 points per game because you gotta. That's why. Like, that's the concern here to me. Matt Nichols, he's going to come along. They're playing at a decent rate. You know, his numbers are right there with, you know, he's not in the upper echelon right now of guys like Riley and Mitchell, for instance, as far as what they're producing, but he's in a pretty good clump of Harris, Durant, Glenn, of guys that are giving you some pretty good numbers here. So the offense is fine. I think the offense is fine and dandy, maybe not operating as efficiently that you'd ideally like if you had a real solid, strong team. But where identify the greatest weakness of this team and what needs to improve the very most, and I think you still have to look on the defensive side of the ball.
For sure, I agree with that. I'm just looking for, like, let us know on the sidelines when an offense goes 6-2 and outs in a row. Doesn't matter what part of the game it is. And I get that's going to happen. Like I said, I can deal with 3-4 in a row. But after that, don't you need to get a first down? Don't you need to sort of get some take back part of the game somehow? And even if it's a first down and then two and outs, it's just that, like, I've covered the Bombers and been on the sidelines where through the offensive days of Marcel Belvey, and I remember Terrence Edwards looking to the sky and being very frustrated because, you know, for the fifth or sixth time in a row, it's 2nd and 6, and he was told to run a 3-yard out. And he catches the ball, and they gain 4 yards, and they needed another 2. And he just looking skyward, like how frustrating that is to the team.
Yeah, those were fun times.
I do think that's a real unfair comparison, if that's what it is, or even something to reference.
I'm not calling that
offense
the same, but I am addressing the fact that when you go 6-2 and outs in a row, whether it's the first quarter or the fourth quarter, that to me is the consistency I'm looking for to break, to sort of get some, be able to move the chains consistently throughout all quarters of the game.
Which I get. I get that. I do understand that. But at the same time, if you're putting up, 32 points a game?
Yep.
In BC, you put up 35 points through the second and third quarters. Your defense is basically enjoying a spa day on the sidelines through 30 minutes of that game. So they should be more than rested enough to help the offense out if there's a bit of struggle along the way in the fourth.
And how about someone calling us up? I don't know if it was Monday. I think it was Monday. And saying, well, I thought we'd have to score 50 to win. What? Like, You know, are Bomber fans really like at that point where you're thinking, okay, they're going to get 48 on us, we need 50 to win sort of thing? Like, it's just, I don't know, man. You got a defense here that is seventh in the league and allowing 399.5 in net yards per game. And that to me is still of great concern. And on, you know, so the yards the defense is allowing, they're also averaging allowing 34.8, which is eighth worst in the league. So you've got right now, just looking at points for and points allowed, you got a team that's second in the CFL in scoring, and then you got a team that is eighth in the league in points allowed. So, you know, what side of the ball is of concern? There is no doubt whatsoever where the anchor is that's holding back this team right now.
Yes, and by no means am I saying that Matt Nichols or the offense is the anchor at all. And it is interesting because looking at, you know, Matt Nichols has thrown 1,080 yards in four starts. He's 39 yards ahead of Zach Kolaros. He's seventh in the league in passing yards. And Jennings and Lule, because they've been splitting the starts, basically, or will be Friday, have less. But yet he's third in touchdown passes at eight, and he's, you know, only Trevor Harris has 12, and Bo Levi Mitchell only has one more than Matt Nichols. So they are scoring. Mm-hmm. It's just that aspect of the game it's looking for. Now, the overall consistency throughout the game, and maybe a step forward from Nichols, too. But, yeah, I totally agree that, like, the defense is something that needs to be played better. I would like to see Matt Nichols sort of continue to evolve, I guess is what I'm saying. Michael Shea also, when he was talking about Matt Nichols and if he or the team was playing its best football right now, talked about Nichols' leadership.
Yeah, that's never going to be in question. He is a fiery competitor. He's always looking at himself first, what he can do better. He's a good teammate. He controls the offense extremely well, and he's a productive player too, right?
And that I totally get, too. Like, that's what I mean. This is Matt Nichols' team. He's earned the right to be the starting quarterback. I'm just looking for him to take steps forward in his play and become an even better quarterback, which I think he can do. I'm just saying at week six, fifth game of the year, that's one of the things I'll be keeping an eye on tonight.
And of course, like when you're looking at that, reflecting back on the game in Toronto where the defense somehow, yeah. I still am perplexed at how to the degree that they did it, but to go from allowing Ricky Ray 243, I believe it was in the first half, to 87 in the second half, how they shut that whole thing down is strange to me, but they were able to do it. And a big part of the success of the Bombers in that game against Toronto from an overall sense is that there were zero sacks allowed. And they had zero turnovers. Matt Nichols did a great job of protecting the football in that game against Toronto, and that was an aspect that the team struggled in with the help of that fake punt call in the fourth quarter as well, with the turnover. So you just can't. The one thing about the Bomber offense is they're very efficient and effective for the most part, but a lot of that is generated on ball security. If you know they're not. BC is dynamic enough offensively, I think, with the explosion type plays and personnel to make up for mistakes like that. It's a little bit more difficult, I think, to do that in what's by and large a sort of a possession type of offense like Winnipeg. Matt Nichols has to protect the ball.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290, teeing up a Minook Adentra Blue Bomber game day. Bombers and Owls, of course, tonight, 7:30 at IGF. And head coach Michael Shea was asked about the quick turnaround given the fashion and the loss they took, the fashion in which they took the loss in BC and the quick turnaround tonight to kick off week six in the Canadian Football League.
Yeah, I think there's always a benefit. You come off a tough loss, a game you feel you should have won, and you're able to get right back at it and focus on the task at hand, which was Montreal. I think the guys moved on very quickly to the prep for Montreal. You have to, because they're a good football team and they're a very physical team, and if you're not executing at a high level and if you haven't watched enough film and prepared your body enough, it's going to hurt.
Short weeks, you know, they don't help you. That's for darn sure. Maybe they help you get over a loss sort of thing, but it doesn't help you get over it if you end up losing the game. Like, a short week takes a day of practice and prep away from you against a team you've never played in yet with Montreal, right? So does it help? Nope. Do you have to deal with it and win no matter what? Absolutely, yep.
Michael Shea was asked also about if his team has a lack of killer instinct late in games.
I wouldn't say we lack a killer instinct. I mean, we're getting those leads, right? You have to have killer instinct to get them. I think you know, I don't know that you analyze it and approach it and say, you know, we really want to work harder in the fourth quarter. I think the idea is to have a killer instinct on every single play, and then that will get you the wins. It's not to flip the switch and say, hey, now it's the fourth quarter, we got to finish. We go through all these scenarios and talk about this all the time, and it's just something that we got to keep on doing and keep on, you know, watching the previous tape and seeing what we can learn from it.
Would it be something to, if he would have said in that media scrum, you want to see killer instinct, and then he wipes out, eradicates the entire media scrum in front of him? I'll say this, and he's always got this very balanced approach and understanding, and I completely understand it. Like, even he said before that regular season games, playoff games, no, they're not the same. We want the same type of approach to each game, and I understand that in theory, but for me it was a night and day different sort of a mentality with the do or die of a playoff game compared to the regular season game. Yeah, I know it's huge, but we got another game next week. Teams take pride. Like, sometimes you'll see certain teams will put up four fingers in the fourth quarter, because everyone is aware of when the fourth quarter is going down. And everyone is aware that up to that point in time, if you want to take the importance put on plays in the first, second, third quarter, things get similar to a regular season game to a playoff game, how everything is magnified exponentially. In a smaller scale, everything happens like that in a game as well, right? Where you can make a mistake in the first quarter and overcome it, second and third even. But when you start making mistakes in the fourth quarter, that's what determines and decides games. And when you're talking about 15 of the 21 games in the CFL being decided in the last 3 minutes this year, that's evidence all you need right there to really put a great deal of emphasis on the fourth quarter. And right now, when you're getting outscored 42-9 in the fourth quarter, the boys aren't feeling all that confident when they see number four go up under the QTR on the scoreboard. And that's something you need to acquire here. So from a team, what you're talking about, JT, where you want to see them take this next step and you want to see a higher level of consistency, all those sorts of things, the magic and the... And I think it's killer instinct is a fair way to frame it, quite frankly. Like, you want everyone just a little bit, that little oomph, right? That percentage of the being more aware of getting a little bit more nasty and focused and really dialed in for that fourth quarter. You want your team to do that week in, week out. And right now, this team is not responding in that manner. And in fact, the teams across the field are. When you get outscored 18-0 in the final quarter last week to lose the game, that is an area of concern. So I say, hell, I don't want, as a teammates, I don't want us to approach the fourth quarter the same way as the first, second, and third, man. Turn it up to about 11 when the fourth quarter comes.
Does this team have a killer instinct?
They have a killer instinct. Is it to the level of the other top teams in the CFL? I don't think it's there yet, but I like what Mike O'Shea said there, where I agree with him the most is they're getting the leads. That's the most important thing. It's a lot easier to learn how to protect leads and how to finish off games than it is trailing 14, trailing 10 going into the fourth quarter and, okay, how do we make up this deficit? So the Bombers are doing the right thing so far. The process has been solid, right? Get the lead in the fourth, learn to finish things off. That is something you can kind of own and sharpen up as the season wears along, as opposed to maybe this team picking up some comeback wins early on and maybe masking some of the issue, the underlying issues around the team.
We'll take a break as we continue to tee up the Bombers and the Owls on a Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day here on TSN 1290. Up next, we'll touch on some baseball and the Gold Cup last night. The U.S. is champions again. And don't forget, at 7 o'clock, we kick it off with our rankings of the Central Division forwards for all the teams in the National Hockey League in the Central. That's coming up. And some baseball next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
90, TSN 1290 and Not AutoCorp present the Blue Bus before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season. We're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you and five buddies up from the starting destination, drive you to the game, and when it's done, we'll take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter to win now at TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. TSN 1290, our Central Division forward rankings. Which teams have the best forward lineup coming up at 7 o'clock? And we're going to do the defense and goaltending tomorrow in the Central Division as we continue to tee up the upcoming NHL hockey season at the end of July. That'll be exciting. Gentlemen, a couple baseball notes. Last night, Adrian Beltre, who's been in the league forever, considered one of the classiest guys to play the game, approaching, I believe, 3,000 hits and some milestones this year, is on deck. But he's not literally on deck in the batter's circle for the Texas Rangers in a blowout to the Miami Marlins, who is throttling them. The umpire, for whatever reason...
And by literally, you mean not standing on the specific circular surface that he's supposed to be standing on.
The physical on-deck circle itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
At home in a Rangers game. And so the umpire decides, and I want to emphasize, nobody stands in the on-deck circle, and it always has bothered me for some reason. And I don't know if it's because they don't want to get hit.
Should have been an ump.
I guess I should have. I would have changed this years ago, and it wouldn't have been an issue last night. The umpire tells Beltran to get in the on-deck circle, and they exchange words on it. So Beltran goes over, grabs the on-deck circle, pulls it back to where he was, and then stands on it, and the umpire tosses him from the game. And after, the Rangers manager was incensed, and he was incensed himself when it happened, saying that nobody stands on the on-deck circle. And it's one of those rules in baseball that the rule is the rule, but it's never enforced. And I don't know why it was last night. And I'll also add to this that you're not allowed to leave the batter's box by the rules of baseball. When you step into bat, you're not allowed to leave the batter's box. And we see it all the time from batters who, you know, they'll foul one off or they'll do whatever, and they walk out of the batter's box and come back in. So to me, that's the same thing. If you're going to start, those are the kind of rules that they are in place, but if you're going to start enforcing them, you should have done it 80 years ago before it all started happening and allowing it for every. Why Adrian Beltran was told to get in the batter's circle, I have no idea. But what are your thoughts on that from an umpire?
Stupid. Another example of maybe an umpire, you know, just abusing their power instead of truly managing a game situation. I mean, if it means that much, you go talk to the guy, and especially with a guy as I thought that quite restrained in the post game press conference was Jeff Bannister, the skip here for the Rangers, and saying, "Look, this guy's chasing history, and you got an ump making a call along these lines." I love Beltrade, what he did there in picking up the mat and sliding it down, moving it to where he was standing, all the rest of it. But just another example of Major League umpire abusing their authority and not really managing the game in the best interest of everyone involved.
Yeah, there's no other sport where the officials, the refs, the umpires, whatever you want to call them, want to make themselves a part of the game more than MLB umpires. And that's all he's doing here. He's either interested in being a fame hog for 30 seconds, or he's got some kind of personal vendetta against Adrian Beltre. There's no other reason you do that, honestly. Like, why else would you magically enforce this rule in the sixth or seventh inning of a 10-run blowout? It's just, whatever reason he's doing this for is completely unprofessional, and MLB should suspend him at least a week for it. It's ridiculous.
That would be interesting if that happened. Now, the other thing in that game was Jason Grilley, the former Jays reliever, is now a Texas Ranger after being let go by the Jays. Earlier in this series, when he got an out, he did what he does. He pumps his fists and his arms, and he screams to himself, "Yeah!" as he walks off. Last night, he threw a high fastball heater that was so high out of the strike zone, and one Carlos Stanton crushed it. And when he crushed it, it was a no-doubter, and he returned the favor by pumping his arms and basically mimicking Mr. Grilley. I have no problem with that. I'm not a big guy to show people up or get into it or get into somebody's faces and be arrogant and cocky. But when he was a Jay, I never thought about it. Now that he's not a Jay, I could see how that would rub other players the wrong way.
Mr. Stanton, or sort of the Rock Jr., as my young son calls him, can do no wrong in my book, man. I thought it was good to you. Dish up a little bit of his own medicine, and I'm all for celebrations regardless, right, when you're hitting a home run. So love Stanton, loved his response.
We'll talk Gold Cup final in a later part of this show, but up next, our Central Division forward rankings coming up on the Royal Sports Power Hour on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and the Walt Morris Group of Companies, including Winnipeg Dodge, present the first ever TSN 1290 Golf for Kids Classic, Tuesday, August 15th at Southwood Golf and Country Club. This is a Texas Scramble Best Ball Tournament with proceeds to benefit the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba and Kids Sport Manitoba. Registration is $150 per person or $500 per foursome, includes 18 holes of golf, cart rental, pre- and post-game buffet-style food and drink freebies, plus chances to win cool prizes, and there'll be a ton of fun at most of the holes thanks to our sponsors and good friends, including the Pint Winnipeg, Royal Sports, Santa Lucia Pizza, J&M Window and Door Company, Darcy Bain Physiotherapy, Windeck Limited, Ashley Furniture, Mr. Lube, FXR Adrenaline Unlimited, the Viscount Gort Hotel, United Firefighters of Winnipeg, Local 867, Star Building Supplies, Avalon Foundation Repair, and Holy Moly Post Hole Digging and Drilling. Space is limited and available on a first-come, first-served basis. Registration now at tsn1290.ca. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and the Royal Sports Power Hour. And I love the name Holy Moly Post Hole Digging and Drilling. It reminds me of my teammate in my flag football team when I lived in BC, who had a stump grinding business. And I used to call Paul and say, when the message would be, you've reached Paul and Larie, and also do check stump grinding, please leave a message. And I would say, yes, I have a stump that needs grinding, Paul.
Oh, dear.
And I'm wondering if you will be picking me up for the game at 6:30, like you said yesterday.
You just shared that with everyone, yeah. Huh?
To which,
okay.
Paul would stop picking me up.
You go take care of your own stump, fella.
And then the trash talk during soccer and flag football games for Paul Duchek would often be, hey, never mind.
Yeah, good. Pull the reins back.
Good business.
Meeting afterwards.
He was good at taking care of trees and stump grinding. Moving on. Here on a Minuuk Denture Blue Bomber game day. Bombers and Owls tonight, 7:30 IGF, and our coverage begins at 5:30 with the Minuuk Denture Blue Bomber game day coverage. Mr. Troy Westwood will be along with Chris Walby and hosted, of course, by Darren Bombing. Darren's going to join us at 8:30 today. Jeff Hamilton's going to tee up the game at 8 as well. We're going to hear from Connor McDavid in this hour. We also have NHL news and notes. But gentlemen, Brandon Ruwicki came up with a great idea, because it's been debated throughout the summer here on the division and who's going to make the playoffs, who's not, to let's maybe break down each team and look at their forwards, defense, and goaltending and come up with some rankings for them. We'll do the defense and the goaltending for all the central teams tomorrow on the Big Show. But today, let's do the forwards. And looking at it last night, I just sort of went through all the teams, looked at their forward lines, goals for, goals against, who's new, who's away, who's not there anymore, and just sort of put it in order 1-7. So if that's what you guys did as well, let's get into it. Troy, we'll start with you. How do you rank the teams in the Central Division's forward cores going into this season?
Well, there's an inherent flaw in this that I don't like very much whatsoever. And that is the vast majority of people are going to do this going and traveling in one direction. And what are the points? What are the capabilities of these guys in putting up a bunch of points? And I just don't think that's necessarily the best way to derive who's got the best forward group. Now, having said that, you look at, and you are surprised. I think a lot of people, unless they're a Wild fan of the Wild, would be surprised to be reminded that the Minnesota Wild scored the most goals in the Central last year, 266, with the Jets being second at 249. And it is shocking, isn't it, to be reminded or to look and see that the Colorado Avalanche scored 166 goals last year. Just remarkable. So, you know, trying to decipher here who's got the best group, especially when you look at a team like Dallas and you're just wondering what are they going to be capable of this year, what are they going to be able to bring to the table, and trying to also have, you know, a good understanding of the bottom six of a lot of teams where you look and a fair number of the guys, especially on the fourth lines, are more or less unknowns. It makes for a very interesting breakdown and discussion or debate for sure. I'm going to dare say that I'm not sure that there's, you know, maybe the Dallas Stars can hang with the top six of Winnipeg. I think the Minnesota Wild, people have a certain thing in their head about the Wild, but they to me are pretty scared. Like, there's just an overall, they're kind of like the Preds were a couple years ago when you look at them and you go, there's a bunch of lunch bucket, blue-collar type guys there for the most part, and you're, like, you'll struggle to find 30 goal scorers last year hanging around with the Wild, right? They're non-existent, but just all kinds of different guys pouring in the puck. So you want upper-end talent? Yeah, I don't know that anyone's got better upper-end talent than Winnipeg, but maybe Dallas does. It's tough, sort of a two-horse race there. I'm going to start off in this conversation by saying that I think that the Stars and the Jets are kind of walking hand-in-hand as far as what they've got, the level of danger that their top six lines present, or top six forwards.
So you have, who has the best? Is it Dallas or Winnipeg? Like, let's go the best to the worst. And I'm gonna call a
dead heat with the Jets and with what Dallas have in their top six. I'm gonna start there instead of committing to something fully here, listening to your guys' arguments going forward. And I'd say that, like, the Wild's forwards are just really, really underrated and dangerous from top to bottom, sort of thing. I'm not crazy. Like, people keep talking about the Jets' forwards, but I'm not. Who's crazy about the truly the top, like, of all four lines here? Who feels real confident in the production? There's some unknown things, right? Is Connor going to come up? Is he going to be? How much noise is he going to make? Is he going to come up, stick and stay? Is he going to pour 20 in a third line role if that's where he's slotted in? You know, how comfortable is anybody with the? Do we know what the fourth line's going to be yet for the Winnipeg Jets? Ideally, people would love to see Adam Lowry as a fourth line center. That's not going to happen. So he's your third line center kind of guy. And is he better than a Faxa? Is he better than a Koivu? Mika Koivu is 104 years old, but he's going to get you damn near 60 points probably again.
Well, and this was an interesting process because, you know, it's on paper. So I understand the system, coaching, health is going to play into this. So I want our listeners to, you know, just keep that in mind. Like, I don't, you know, when we get into this and people are going to say, well, you know, well, so-and-so scores 80 points every year and all that. And there's no way to tell if he's going to be healthy, if he's going to do it again. But on paper, like, just in July, who do you like and who do you not? And really, when it came down to sort of placing them, for me anyway, was just depth. Like, there's some teams with really good top sixes. There's not a lot of teams with a really, really good top nine that can score points. And then when you talk Minnesota, it still surprises me that they led the Central in scoring. And it still surprises me that they don't have a 70-point man on that team. And they led the Central in scoring. Their depth overall really, for me, propelled Minnesota to have the – when I'm looking at all four lines, to me, Minnesota has the top forwards in the Central Division. Now, they don't have a 30-goal scorer. And they don't have a guy over 70 points. But consistently looking at the lines in the Central Division, 1 through 4, to me, they have the best overall depth forwards in the Central.
Yeah, so it really depends how you kind of look at it, right? Because like Troy touched on there, if you're looking at elite top-end skill, the Jets have the most out of anyone in the division, I think. You got four guys, Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers, Laine. Now, the Stars, you can, you know, if you want to throw Radulov in there with Sagan, Ben, and Spezza, then, okay, they're tied with Winnipeg. But outside of those two teams, you're looking at three, maybe, for some of those teams, but for sure two.
Chicago, yeah. It's tough to push Chicago too far away when you're talking
Taves and Kane, and then who else, though?
Well, you're going to just, like, Anisimov and panic, you'll push off.
I don't want to put, not elite, though. Like, good players, right? And even Brandon Saad, I think, is kind of knocking on the door there, but not up to that level.
To that point, like, I like Saad, I really do, and I like him back playing with Taves, but he, the past 3 years, has scored 50 to 55 points.
Yeah.
So 3 years in a row. So there's not that guy there that's going to get you 70 to 80 points.
Yeah, I think it's a minor downgrade from what Panarin gave you. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and you kind of touched on it too, Troy, there at the beginning. You know, the Jets might score the most goals in the Central this year. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily mean they have the best forward core.
That's right, yep.
Because you watch Nashville in the postseason and show me a team where their forwards play defense as soundly as Nashville's. All 12, right, like top to bottom. There's no one that takes a shift off. There's no one that takes a second off at any point in the ice. And I think Minnesota's kind of in the same mold, too. So, you know, I look at the Jets and I look at the Stars, and they both might end up in the top three in goals for in the entire NHL this upcoming season. Like, they're that talented. But what are they going to do inside their own end is another question that I think remains unanswered yet. And the Stars are going to be interesting because we've never seen them under Ken Hitchcock before, who's, you know, Mr. Hard-ass inside your own end. So you wonder if there's kind of a maturation process there. But I don't know. I'm kind of struggling with this right now because I think you look at Dallas and, you know, top to bottom, they're terrifying offensively. And I think they have just a little bit more than what the Jets do right now. Because I think if you compare Hanzel to Lowry, you give the edge to the Stars there. And even the fourth line with Faxa and Janmark. I mean, people forget about Matthias Janmark, who was out all last year. But he had 30-plus points as a rookie, too. So, Dallas is a scary, scary offensive team. And then you have Minnesota and Nashville, who, you know, they're not giving you much space out there. And they're making it tough to play against, you know, basically lines 1 through 4. So, I don't know. I might put the Jets at number 4 in terms of forward cores in the Central. And it has nothing to do with what they are offensively. It has everything to do with how they play in their back half of the ice. And then I think, for me, the bottom three, I would put them as Chicago, St. Louis, and everyone's going to have Colorado last. But Chicago just took too much of a step back for me. Who they had replacing who they lost, you know, they downgraded in each of those categories, and I just think they're really banking on a lot from their young guys in the bottom six, and I just feel more comfortable with what those top four teams have offensively.
This is the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Troy and Brandon, and we're ranking the forward cores for the Central Division teams. I looked at it as potential to score. Scoring is one thing you cannot teach. You can teach defensive zone play, and when you look at how many goals the Jets scored last year, that was a major difference in keeping the puck out of the net compared to scoring. Chicago, I've been on record as saying, I think they've taken a step back. They had two players score 70 or more points, and one of them is gone in Panarin. Brandon Saad's coming in with 50 points. Panarin had 74. Jonathan Toews, and I looked at also if you played 70 games or more. I'll give you 12 games off with injuries or banged up or whatever. So my rankings, gentlemen, went Minnesota for their depth. And I know they don't have 170-point score on there, but they led the Central in scoring. They were one of the top five teams in scoring in the National Hockey League last year, and it's just spread out 1 through 4 on their lines. So I had Minnesota there. I know that Bruce Boudreau, the head coach of the Minnesota Wild, says that the Jets have the top six, or did say last year, in the league. So for me, my rankings went Minnesota, Winnipeg, Dallas, St. Louis, and Dallas, St. Louis very close to each other, and Winnipeg just slightly above Dallas just for the third line. I like the third line. I have Kyle Connor making the team this year. So then the third lines came through. I had Winnipeg slightly ahead of Dallas. And so after those four teams, I have Chicago, Nashville, and Colorado. And I think Chicago and Nashville need a lot of credit for the way they play defensively as forwards and the system and the coaching they have there. But I just don't see them scoring a lot of goals or as many goals as St. Louis, Dallas, Winnipeg, and Minnesota. So my rankings in the division for forward cores for depth, potential of goal scoring are Minnesota, then Winnipeg, then Dallas, then St. Louis, Chicago, Nashville, Colorado. You guys, in order?
I don't really have an order for this, just because I think there's too many things that come into play when you're discussing who the best forwards are. Like, to talk goal scoring, to talk overall defensive play, to talk within the systems that they're in and running, and there's all kinds of unknowns. I think people are really underestimating what Mike Yeo is going to be getting from the St. Louis group when we're talking about overall contributions to helping to keep the puck out of the net. And although, like, they're not as maybe, you know, when you pick up Shen and you got Steen there, Sabatka is your third line, I'd still like what St. Louis brings to the table. Although I don't expect them to score as much as the Jets, I think that they'll be probably that much more effective, maybe overall in a defensive sense. So I have a lot of trouble ranking them. I do agree with you, though, that when you look at the Minnesota Wild, up and down and what they bring to the table, everything involved with the coaching, players, and the collectiveness of their goal scoring and contributions, that up and down one to the fourth line, that they seem to stand out a little bit.
Yeah. I think if Mikko Koivu and Eric Staal don't lose a step this year, you'd have to pick Minnesota, I think, over Winnipeg right now. And I mean, if I'm going to look at it as which forward core would I rather have this season? And I'm going to try and push coaching out of it as much as I can. And I think I would take Minnesota and Dallas over what Winnipeg have. And I would put Winnipeg just a tiny bit over Nashville just because, and I love what Nashville has because it's kind of that you don't get a second off and they're dangerous up and down the lineup, but the elite skill after that top line isn't there for me. And I think the Jets have a little bit more. So I think as of right now, I would slot Winnipeg third behind Dallas and Minnesota.
Interesting. Those are the rankings on The Big Show, TSN 1290. We'll take a break, get your thoughts on those on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. But up next, Connor McDavid on the Olympics on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 Summer Street Team is at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity fundraisers, and more. And we'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to give you a chance to win great stuff like a weekend road trip getaways from Explore Egan, Minnesota, which includes two-night stays at Egan Holiday Inn Express, $100 gift card for Casper's Cherokee of Egan, and family passes for Ford and Nickelodeon Universe, Moose Mountain, and Sea Life at Mall of America, and more. Tim Hortons and McMunn and Yates gift cards, Jets gear, a Burton snowboard with bindings from Alter Ego Sports. Plenty more prizes as well. For more information on the TSN 1290 Summer Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon with you on The Big Show. And gentlemen, yesterday, Connor McDavid was at a charity event and was asked about not going to the Olympics.
It's I'm really upset about it. It's not. You want to be able to represent your country on the highest stage, and the Olympics is obviously the highest stage possible. And to know that you might not be able to represent your country at the Olympics for another 4 years for sure, and even if you're able to in 4 years, it's disappointing. I don't think that Team Canada will be able to put together a team, like they would have been able to put together this year. It would have been a special group, and you're just hoping to be a part of it. But ultimately, it looks like it's not going to happen, and it's disappointing, but it's the way it is.
Would you talk to ownership at all about a possibility, or you just?
No, I'm not too involved in all that stuff. There's a lot of guys that have been in the league a lot longer than I have, and have a lot more pull than I do, and. Obviously, it's disappointing, but it's the way it is, like I said, and you don't want to leave your team for a month, because I figured that question was going to come up next. Would you go anyway? And the answer would be no. I think it's just you don't want to leave your team.
Connor McDavid on not happy that the NHL players aren't going to the NHL, and then saying that no, if the likes of Ovechkin and other players go anyways, despite the NHL, he would not be going.
I heard you guys, I can't remember if it was Tuesday or Wednesday, you guys are talking about this, but my goodness, what a firestorm this could create. If Ovechkin goes, what are the ramifications? And like McDavid's saying there, it's basically the month of February that you're going to be gone. And if Malkin were to follow that, what does that do to the Penguins? And how does Crosby, what happens in that locker room? And then Crosby's going to stay, right? He's not going to push this whole thing. So it's unfortunate from a fan's perspective for me that McDavid isn't being a little bit more forceful with this, because I think I understand the hierarchy and how we sort of, and especially in hockey, it seems to be something that's still pretty sacred. We're just sort of falling in line and understanding where you are as far as the veteran leadership goes. But it'd be nice as a fan if he would to sort of grab that torch and be a little bit more aggressive with it. But it is super fascinating to wonder, just one guy, like if just Ovechkin all by himself, if he goes, the impact on the Capitals for the month of February will be profound. And then is there any, like, does anybody else go? Does Malkin go? And the pressure on the Russians by everyone you follow and when you're reading about this is going to be sizable. So it sets up to be a heck of a clash upcoming possibly and something to really be quite dramatic in February.
And I don't think people can really truly understand the political pressure on guys like Ovechkin and Malkin who, you know, with Putin and Russia and the pressure that's going to be on those guys. Like
his upcoming election.
Yeah, like
right? Yeah.
So, I mean, the Russians are kind of in a different spot than most other players, but, man, would you ever love to hear the conversations maybe between, say, I don't know, Sidney Crosby and Patrice Bergeron and Drew Doughty and some of those guys getting together and saying, what are you going to do? What are you going to do if we decide to go there? Like, I don't really understand how the NHL could penalize them enough that would prevent them from going to the Olympics. Like, if there's some kind of a revolt, that's going to be the story of maybe of the decade when it comes to hockey.
I know this isn't the popular thought process, and I understand it's not the right thing the NHL asked them to do, but would one more year of collective bargaining agreement, if you really wanted to go, be that awful? Like, are the players not doing okay under this system? And I don't like the way they sort of held it hostage to get one more year out of it, but if you really wanted to go this bad and you're so disappointed, wouldn't one more year be that awful? And we're heading towards Armageddon, I'm told, anyway. So wouldn't it
I agree
don't
with
the players
yeah.
play a role in this? That go, hey, I don't like the fact that you're dangling this over us and it's dirty pool, but to be able to go and do this, yeah, we'll take one more year of this system that seems to be working for both of us. Like, the players have to take some responsibility, too. I understand what Connor McDavid's saying, but then step up with the Crosbys and the Bergerons in a room and go, hey.
And to me, the players don't need to take responsibility for it. They can control it a little bit by, or I don't know if it's even still on the table, right, that one more year of CBA, but it's absolute crap that we're in the position that we're in here, and let's hope somehow the players find a way to go still.
Mitch Gallo's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Leave the back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, including catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl, hot bar, tortillas. You can make tacos and an abundance of three cheese queso. Beverages, including a sampling of Tall Grass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka, produced by Capital K Distillery. A family pack of fireworks to light up the night, courtesy of our friends at Archangel Fireworks, and iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for each grand prize winner provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of a week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We also have TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties happen every Thursday evenings throughout the summer, and our fourth and final party will happen on August 10th. To enter, get in on the final one, go to TSN1290.ca, and we could be seeing you very soon. The Big Show, TSN 1290, on a Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day. Al's in town to take on the Bombers at IGF at 7:30 tonight. And to tee it up for us on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon is our good friend Mitch Gallo from TSN 690 in Montreal. How are you, sir?
Good morning, guys.
How you doing?
I'm doing all right.
How are the Montreal Alouettes this year?
The Montreal Alouettes are inconsistent this year. The problem with the team is that they don't score a lot of points. They're built around a very hyper-aggressive defense, but the scoring points on offense has been a bit of an issue. They had a tremendous win over Calgary a couple weeks ago where they were able to hit that 30-point mark for the first time this year. They have been in every game. They've had a chance to win every game because of their fantastic defense. But right now, the focus is on offense because they don't score a lot of points.
Is that something that appears like it's going to come around? I'm saying that they're number one in the CFL in plays, in yards per play, sorry, and number four in net offense, but like you're saying, eighth in scoring. Does it appear like they're knocking on the door of busting through their troubles putting up points?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I think that if you look at last game, the game was really lost in the first half when they turned over the football once in the red zone on an interception, and then again later on they turn over the football and the Red Blacks go back and score a touchdown the other way. That's a swing of 10 points. And then they really came on in the second half, but it was a too little too late, even though they tell you they also got hosed on a third and one call with Vernon Adams Jr. on a quarterback sneak. I think that the offense has the tools and weapons to be successful. I think that you look at Darian Durant and what he's done so far in Montreal, it looks like he's trying to do a little bit too much. And it just looks like sometimes he tries to force a play that's not there, or he's just overthinking the game. And I think that's a combination of learning the offense, learning what the Alouettes want to do, and learning about all his new teammates. The other thing going into the game tonight, Tyrell Sutton was a big part of their win against the Calgary Stampeders. Tyrell Sutton's dealing with a calf contusion, so he will not be dressed for tonight's game. So you'll see Brandon Rutley at running back. Rutley did not have a great game last week, but the Alouettes are confident that he can be just as effective as Ty Sutton. But the running game, based on what you're talking about, the way that they've been successful yards per play, has a lot to do with what they've been able to do with the run game. We'll see if Rutley can match what Sutton brings to the field.
Well, yes, Sutton has been very good in my mind so far for the Owls, Mitch. How do these two teams match up then, given what you've said about Montreal and where they're sort of at it, 2-3 and you know, only scoring 101 points but only giving up 109? How do they match up against a 2-2 Winnipeg Blue Bombers team in your mind?
Yeah, you know, I think they match up pretty evenly, and both teams at this point of the season are in similar spots. The Alouettes coming off what I would call a heartbreaking loss to Ottawa. They were on a short week, as was Ottawa on the Monday night game, but they really feel like they could have had a better result. And then you look at the Bombers, and I would also classify what happened to them last week against the BC Lions as a heartbreaking loss. Both teams looking to get above that 500 mark at this point in the season, but as we both know, the CFL season, it's not won in the first four or five games of the year. Really, the middle portion of the season is what makes or breaks you. Obviously, you can afford to make things easier on yourselves later on in the season if you're able to get off to a good start, but these are the games as we enter the heart of the schedule that mean a lot more. So I think both teams are going to see what they have on a one-on-one matchup here. And, I mean, again, you talk about the matchup last season. I believe the two teams split the season series. So I think we should see a very competitive, even football game.
Nick Lewis is listed at 5'10", 240. I'm not sure he's that tall or that light. I'm wondering, when you go in and talk to him, Mitch, when you're around him, can you let us in on what kind of guy he is, and just to be around and interview and such, and also how much of an impact he makes in the locker room for the guys?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the Alouettes have a lot of key veteran guys that are their presence is obviously felt anytime you're around that team. And I'm talking about Kyrie Zébert, who will play in game 150 tonight. I'm talking about John Bowman, who's been a staple on that Alouettes defense. Same goes for Chip Cox. But when you're talking about Nick Lewis, it's funny. Actually, we had him in studio last week with us for our Friday afternoon drive show, and he stayed in for like 45 minutes. And he's a lot of fun. He's somebody who has such an appreciation for the game. He watches every CFL game every week. He's just a big fan. And, of course, we know that it seems like every game where we watch Nick Lewis play, he's reaching some kind of milestone. Last week, reaching the 1,000 catch club, which was just tremendous. But you talk to Nick, loves the game, loves his teammates. He's a competitor. He wants to win. And I think when you have guys like that around, it's very contagious for the locker room. And I think the Alouettes really do feel his presence on a day-to-day basis.
Mitch Gallo from TSN 690 in Montreal joining us today on the Big Show, TSN 1290, 41 minutes past the hour on the Royal Sports Power Hour. Mitch, talk about Jacques Champdelaine and his staff and you know, whether they've sort of put their stamp on this team or they're still searching for it. A lot was made when the regime in Montreal changed, and not many people maybe didn't think poorly of Jacques Champdelaine, but maybe there were some better candidates out there. How has he been as a coach and his staff?
I think he's still finding his way here. Until we see the offense resolved, which is what we started this conversation talking about, I don't think we're going to give him a lot of credit. But I do think he's added a lot of stability. I think last year, before he took over as interim head coach, and then obviously in the offseason being named head coach, there was a lot of internal problems with the staff, and that's why eventually they needed a shakeup from the top down, and Jacques Champdelaine ultimately the guy they go with as head coach. But I think that things are stable now. We're just waiting on the offense to get going. He is very conservative, and I think for some fans that's a little bit hard to latch onto. He's got that basketball on grass style of offense, which if it's not going, it can be tough to watch. But if they start moving the chains, then it can be successful. I think the guys do like him, and I think that he does deserve credit for what the Alouettes have done so far this year. You look at the coaching staff as a whole. Again, Noel Thorpe is the guy that's really making that defense tick. And Champdelaine's job is the offense. So we got to see the Alouettes start to put up points if Jacques Champdelaine is going to be heralded as an elite coach in the Canadian Football League with the Alouettes.
Mitch, when the Alouettes came back from the Baltimore Stallions to the Alouettes, and when they moved from the Big O to McGill, man, that was the hottest ticket in town, it seemed. It was pretty easy to give your seats away. You got as a player. There was never an empty seat. And now the capacity of Percival Molson Memorial is just over 25,000. And I remember a couple weeks ago in watching that game against Calgary and what seemed to be a beautiful night in Montreal, there was 18,610 people there. And we talk often about the attendance concerns that are in Toronto and in BC, and people aren't real sure specifically in Toronto what to do about the dwindling interest. Are you concerned at all about the apparent diminishing interest or attendance for sure with the Alouettes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would tell you this, specifically in Montreal, I'm hesitant because I don't want to call out the fan base, but the fan base in Montreal, no matter what sport it is, whether it's hockey, whether it's baseball, or whether it's the Canadian Football League, if you're not icing a competitive team, the fans aren't going to show up. And I can't say I'm calling out the fans in that regard just because of the fact that I understand, because there's so many options in the city, and people work hard for their money, and they're going to spend it on what entertains them. And if they're not entertained by what the Montreal Alouettes are doing, I don't blame them. And if they want to see a winner, that's perfectly in their right. But in the city, there's so much to do. You have the Just for Laughs Festival going on right now, and I've been to a bunch of comedy shows. Those are all sold out. You go to the festival area, it's jam-packed. People are out having a good time. You know, you have the Montreal Canadiens in the winter that you might be spending money on. You have the Montreal Impact, the MLS soccer team here. You have the Jazz Festival. There's so many things to do and so many things to spend your money on. And again, this has been a city where if you're not fielding a competitive team, they aren't going to go to the games. But you just look back to a few years ago, and again, The attendance also has to do with the fact that they kept adding on to Percival Molson Stadium over and over, just adding seats, adding seats, adding seats, and eventually maybe you just made the building too big to fill out. But you go back to the days of Anthony Calvillo and Ben Cahoon, and the years where the Alouettes were competitive, and you knew every year that they had a chance to play in the Grey Cup and were almost guaranteed a spot in that East Final, people were going to the football games. I mean, they would play games in the playoffs at the Olympic Stadium, and those games would sell out with relative ease. So I don't know so much about other cities, but I'd tell you in Montreal, if this team was a contender to win the Grey Cup, the fans will fill out the 20-plus thousand that it can fit at Percival Molson Stadium.
Who stood out to you during the Comedy Fest?
Who stood out to me during the Comedy Fest? Well, I went to see the Ethnic show that we had, which was, I saw that last week, and Alonzo Bowden was the host, and he's so good. He was on Last Comic Standing. I think
right,
he won
yeah.
season three. He was really good. I was at the Nasty show, Big J Okerson. I saw him earlier this week. He was fantastic. And this year, those would be the two guys, Big J Okerson and Alonzo Bowden. Put on fantastic shows in years past. I mean, we've been so spoiled.
Yeah,
I've seen Louis C.K. at the festival. I've seen Kevin Hart at the festival. I've seen Dave Chappelle at the festival. So every year, it's a really good time.
Mitch, we're looking forward to the game tonight as well. And thanks for your insight. Thanks for doing this as always.
Hey, my pleasure, guys.
Thanks so much, Mitch. Take care, man.
Mitch Gallo from TSN 690 in Montreal. NHL news and notes are coming up next on the Royal Sports Power Hour on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Good jam.
You don't get much more hardcore than this.
Woo! Woo! Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber game day. Starts coverage pregame, 5:30. Bombing, Westwood, Walby. Game at 7:30, IGF. Full halftime and postgame coverage as well coming up on TSN 1290. And don't forget to pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf card today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great 2-for-1 deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Selkirk Golf and Country Club, The Meadows Golf and Country Club, Larders at St. Andrews Golf and Country Club, Winkler Centennial Golf Course, Carmen Golf Club, and Lavarande Golf Course, just to name a few. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card and for a complete list of participating courses, visit tsn1290.ca.
Strong D versus a strong O in football. I've always felt the strong D wins.
Defense wins championships. I learned that in the 85 Bears season.
That was fun. I remember watching that, man. That's what you get tonight. You get the number one D in scoring versus the number two offense in scoring. Montreal D's only allowed 9 big plays so far this year. Their D's good, man. You got Chip Cox playing. They used to be a linebacker, now back at halfback. He's just vicious and wicked. You got John Bowman with only 1 sack but 8 QB pressures. You know, interestingly, too, the Owls only have 3 sacks this entire season, which is dead last in the CFL. They are number one in that they've only allowed 3 sacks. In 5 games, they've only allowed 3 sacks. That is crazy.
You know what, though? It seems like in the regular season, for whatever reason, the offense always finds a way to beat the defense, but then when it comes playoff time and in championship games, it's always the defense that takes down the number one rated off. We see it in the Super Bowl all the time. I think we have to go back like 20 or 30 years the last time the number one ranked offense beat the number one defense.
Even in regular season games, man, I just disagree with you, man. I think D's will shut down the offense the majority of times.
Well, what about Patriots-Falcons?
28-3? I love that. All of the things done with 28-3 since that game is something.
Broncos literally won their last Super Bowl on defense. Peyton Manning did nothing, and they faced one of the most high-potent offenses in Carolina.
Which is what I said. Yeah. I said in championship
You're saying
games.
Just championships,
I'm
yeah.
saying come playoff time, the defense rarely loses that battle. But for whatever reason in the regular season, the offense gets, you know, that's kind of their chance to test that theory and test that claim that defense wins championships.
I think it holds true regular season too, man.
Well, we'll see.
Here's one interesting thing in the CFL with sacks so far. Get this, on 591 drives this season, so this is according to CFL stats, of all the drives during the course of the regular season here, there's been at least one sack on 81 of those drives. No one has scored a touchdown this season on a drive when they've allowed a sack. And in fact, over the last 34 games going back to last season, only twice has a team scored a touchdown when that same team has allowed a sack on a drive. Just how impactful sacks are.
More on the game coming up with Jeff Hamilton at 8 o'clock. Let's do some NHL news and notes, gentlemen. And Paul Edmonds brought this up yesterday when I was co-hosting the afternoon ride with him. Johnny Gaudreau, being asked the question about what he'd like to play in his hometown, said, yeah, it would be kind of cool. I got a lot of friends here. They follow me up in Calgary. It's interesting, blah, blah, blah. He's got 5 years left on his deal that he signed. And he's had to come out since that interview in Salem, New Jersey, about 40 miles south of Philadelphia, and say, look, I love Calgary. I was asked if you would like to play in your hometown. I don't know a lot of players that wouldn't. I was just commenting on that. I hope to be in Calgary a long time. I have a 5-year deal left. He had to clarify some things on that. Edmonds' issue was with the question. Why do you ask players if they'd like to play in their hometown and how unfair it is to the player? And I said, and we listened to the audio from Gaudreau, and I said, wait a minute. I've heard Jonathan Toews get asked that question. And Jonathan Toews said, I love my hometown, but the Blackhawks drafted me. I love it there. I love what we've done. I love where we're going. I hope to be there a long time. That's, to me, the way to answer the question. Gaudreau didn't say that so much. He just went on about how many friends he has there, how they always go back there every summer, how he's there for a wedding. It's so good to see everybody. They support him up in Calgary. So it would be really neat one day to play in my hometown. Now, I think the question is unfair. I get it. But also, there's a different way you can answer that. What do you think of the fact that Johnny Gaudreau said that?
I don't think there's such a thing as an unfair question. Having been in that situation for 18 years and dealing with the media, I don't think there's no such thing as an unfair question. It's up to you as a player to understand the game that you're in. I mean, as much as the sport that you're playing is a game, when you're dealing with the media and speaking in a public manner in that way, you got to be on. You got to flip the switch. You got to be on. Same way Paul Maurice is on night in, night out. The same way Mike O'Shea is. Players, same thing. Scheifele, Crosby, all those guys. You got to be on. And if you slip up, make a mistake, it will be exposed. Johnny Gaudreau, that's just it's not really a dumb answer, I suppose. Maybe it's more naive on his part. It's the sort of thing you make the mistake and you'll never make that type of mistake again. But that's another example of where honesty gets you, right? You have to always be on and understand the impact, which is why you see so many NHL players. You'd get that cookie cutter response, all the cliches and all the rest of it. But that's just the game. You're when those mics are on, the lights are on in front of you, the tape is rolling, all the rest of it, you have to be on. You can't slip up.
Isn't it also fine to say that you don't want to play in your hometown?
Well, I mean, sure it is. I just think this is the dumbest, most idiotic mini controversy in the summer that we hear from athlete. Like he was asked, would you like to play in your hometown? I think the question might have been, would it be cool to play in your hometown? And he said, yeah, it would be cool. He didn't say I'm leaving Calgary to go to Philly the second I'm out of my contract. He just said, hey, I would love to play in my hometown. Who wouldn't? And then everybody parses through that and tries to decipher that while he hates Calgary, he wants to leave, and now he's forced to kind of clarify his comments. But I agree where this is, people want athletes and want hockey players to speak their minds. And when Johnny Gaudreau very, very delicately says and answers a question honestly, people rip him and take him apart for it, and that's why these guys don't want to do that. To me, this is just a complete non-issue, and it's something that, look, if there's a year left in his contract and he says it would be awesome and maybe that's something I would consider, then yeah, it's a bit of a story, but He's got nowhere to go for 5 years.
I tell you, boys, you got to be smart, though. Obviously, if you say that you, like, you just got to understand the ramifications of your statement. He's got to be smarter than that.
That's what I think.
It's on the player.
I understand what Paul's saying about the question, because if he says no, then people in his hometown go, oh, he doesn't want to play here. If he says yes, and people in Calgary go, oh,
you all you do want- is say, I'm super happy being in Calgary, yeah. Blah, 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 can't wait to help us, blah, blah, blah.
I honestly thought, I agree with Brandon, I honestly thought he could answer better, but it is, to me, admit, whatever. It's not a big controversy. Jeff Hamilton's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is a proud supporter of the 5th Annual Stars 4 Special O Golf Tournament, Tuesday, August 23rd at Glendale Golf and Country Club, the home course of the Big Show. It's a Texas Scramble-style tournament with proceeds going to Special Olympics Manitoba. Lots of fun throughout. Each team is assigned a celebrity golfer to play with for 9 holes. Includes dinner, draws, silent auction, and much more. For more details, visit specialolympics.mb. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. 5 minutes past hour, an hour away from the Boss Pizza fan line. Lots to talk about. Connor McDavid's comments. Our Central Division rankings of the forwards for all the teams. And, of course, the Bombers and the Owls. Who do you have tonight? We'll do that on the Boss Pizza fan line at 9. And to help tee up the game as well, from the Winnipeg Free Press, Mr. Jeff Hamilton. How are you, sir?
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. We'll start with Mr. Kyrie Zabert, and we heard his comments there on SportsCenter and firing it up and telling Matt Nichols what he thinks. What are your thoughts on the comments from Kyrie Zabert yesterday when you heard them?
Love it, man. Like, that's what the CFL needs. The CFL is, you know, I don't know if it's when, not saying it needs to be like more WWE or anything, but you know, the trash talking's good. It gets people involved. It's good trash talking. It's funny because it wasn't as if Kyrie Zabert was, you know, ripping into Matt Nichols, but he was just making light of you know, the support that I thought that Matt Nichols was genuine on, just about this defense. It's a good Montreal defense. It's the best part of their team for sure. And just for him to fire back and, you know, kind of tongue firmly planted in cheek, you know, support Matt Nichols back, I think it was great. And, you know, maybe it's kind of true. It's kind of weird when you hear other teams kind of supporting, you know, when teams support other teams and talk about how good they are, when you kind of want them to be like, we're better than them. You know, that's kind of the approach media likes, of course. And when you get glimpses of that, it's refreshing. I thought Kyrie Zabert was perfect. And it was fitting for him because he's a funny guy, former Bomber, and I thought it was just great.
Hammer, there is no doubt whatsoever opposing offenses are going at the side of Walker and Carmichael. You saw number 4 out there a lot against BC with plays going by him. What can the Bomber secondary do to maybe thwart some of those veteran quarterbacks picking on that side?
Yeah, I don't think much. I think it's for the Bombers. It's you wonder, is it going after Brian Walker and Rock Carmichael, or is it just a matter of staying away from TJ Heath and Chris Randall, both of which have had great seasons so far for the Bombers defense? But, you know, I don't think you can. Talking to TJ Heath yesterday, you know, he said he was talking to Randall about that, and, you know, you can't ask them to throw the ball or where to throw the ball. At this case, I think for the Bombers, it's just a matter of hoping that experience and, you know, what those guys like Rock Carmichael and Brian Walker and Brandon Alexander and Kyle Knox, all these guys who have kind of, you know, sprung into starting roles due to injuries, are just going to get better every week and eventually going to have that breakout game or eventually it's going to click. You know, it's not going to click, you know, just overnight, but these guys have had a couple starts now. So this is, I think, a game that is kind of ripe for the picking. Montreal's offense isn't bad, but they aren't good. You know, they get the yards, but they don't score the points. So maybe this is an opportunity for some of those younger guys to get that confidence, have a game that, you know, the Bombers have been looking for the last few weeks. But, you know, as you mentioned, Troy, I mean, it's just been kind of the MO for other teams is to come in here and whether it's on the road or, you know, at home, just pick on that field side. So I'm sure that's going to happen tonight. It's just a matter of fact if the guys want to step up and make plays and force the offense to spread the ball around.
Where is Matt Nichols and this Bombers offense at this point in the season in your mind?
Depends. Do you want to take certain chunks out of a game and evaluate, or do you want to take the whole thing? I think, you know, there's been times where Matt Nichols has been lights out. I mean, 5 for 5 in the red zone last game, you can't really ask for more than that. As a whole, though, I just think it's been just glaringly inconsistent. And you know, I don't know what's more glaring, the slow starts or the bad finishes, but, you know, I guess I will answer that. I'd say the bad finishes are bad. Teams outscored 42-9 in the fourth quarter is just a recipe of disaster. And the reality is you can't, you know, you got to give your defense some rest. You can't have them playing most of the game. That's when most of the games are decided. If you look at the stats guys, I think it's like everything but 10 games have been decided in the final 3 minutes. Well, if you're not doing anything as an offense the entire quarter, pretty much, you know, you're just leaving your defense out to dry. And that's certainly the Bombers' case. I think Matt Nichols is a good leader. I think, you know, it was good to see him rush a 20-yard touchdown, because I think when you look at across the league and look at some of the more dynamic quarterbacks, they have that mobility. So that's something Matt Nichols said he worked on it and wanted to add to his game more this season. That 20-yard run was the second longest run of his CFL career. So that just kind of speaks to how often he is running and how far he is running downfield. But you know what? He's a guy who I don't think makes a ton of mistakes, and you know, the offense is going to get better. I think is the explanation from them that it's still relatively early, that they're only 4 games in, but just some of the trends and patterns, whether it's the slow starts or the even worse finishes, I think are troubling and has left him, I think, out of the conversation for elite quarterbacks, if you will.
I love the type of receiver. I think Daron Carter's one of them. Nick Lewis might be one of them, certainly when he's younger. Aquan Bolden in the NFL. But receivers that catch the ball and then, instead of getting a tackle, they typically levy a blow and sort of, you know, bring the physicality to the end of the play. Is T.J. Thorpe a guy like that?
I think so. I think he's, you know, I think he brings, and I wouldn't say by accident, because the Bombers have liked this guy since training camp, but just from what the BC Lions were giving them last game, I thought he really had a breakout game. The 8 catches and, you know, half the yards being after the catch, he really is that kind of bulldozing, put your shoulder down into the secondary, bruising kind of guy. I mean, we saw it on a couple occasions last game against the Lions. I thought there was one particular part where he caught the ball about, I don't know, 2 or 3 yards, you know, ahead of the line of scrimmage, and then bulldozed his way to a first down, but he got whistled about 2 or 3 yards before when the play shouldn't have stopped. You know, this guy was kept going through and finishing on his play. And they kind of used Andrew Harris for that, right? That ditch pass, that safety blanket. Well, I was kind of saying this on your guys' station a couple of days ago, but it feels almost like that video game option of like L1, R1, where, you know, you play against your buddy and you don't know any of the X's and O's of the game, so you just run this same play and you ditch it left or right. I could totally see the Bombers doing that, and because of a guy like T.J. Thorpe, who has the ability not only to catch the ball, of course, but to just extend drives with his punishing plays. So, again, it's only one game, but showed a lot of promise, and I think he might figure to be playing a similar role against Montreal, who's going to have a similar defensive scheme as far as the Lions, or when compared to the Lions, just in that coverage and blocking the run and kind of giving those areas on the outside open and just violent tackles after. So it'll be interesting to see what T.J. Thorpe can do against the Alouettes.
Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press joining us on the Big Show this morning, 12 minutes past the hour on TSN 1290, helping us tee up the Bombers and Alouettes tonight at IGF. What is the lifespan of Rock Carmichael now that Mr. Fogg is healthy and will dress tonight?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I wonder how healthy Kevin Fogg is. I'm not saying he's probably playing hurt or anything like that, but, you know, this is a guy who's probably going to get brought into the punt return and kind of slowly get brought into the lineup. I don't see a drastic change, at least this game, but yeah, to answer your question, I don't know how many more chances Rock Carmichael gets. You know, maybe this is the final one. You know, I think we were saying that last week and maybe even the week before that. But it's, you know, it's, injuries are injuries. I mean, they're you know, a lot of key guys out, a lot of guys moving in. So if Kevin Faugh can come in that position and play the way he played during parts of last year, then yeah, of course it's his gig. But you know, you got to think there's a reason why he hasn't already done that or isn't starting this week. I think the Bombers have a lot of faith in Rock Carmichael, perhaps more than anybody else, of course. People who have littered all the radio stations and social media suggested getting rid of this guy. But, you know, he is a hard worker, and, you know, people scoff at that, but he is the last guy off the field every day, and he has put in the work, and he does have the pedigree as far as a football player. He just needs to start proving it, and no better time than the present, because I don't think his leash is all that long, but he's still there, and he still has an opportunity to prove he can play there.
A lot of people were mystified when the Owls let Bear Woods go, and Instex Dominique Tovel with 6'2", 248, just a kind of an old-fashioned big fella at their middle linebacker, and with the overall play of their defense, it doesn't look like they made much of a mistake in letting Bear Woods go.
Yeah, and how well has he played for Toronto? You know, it just seems to work out for both sides, but, you know, I'm talking to people in Montreal, it's kind of a mixed bag on that defense. Obviously, you have the older guys like Hubert and Bowman and Cox and stuff, and then you have guys that are just young and no one really knows, or are new to the league, 1 or 2 years into the league, and are playing over their heads. I don't think anyone expected this. I mean, Noel Thorpe's obviously a great defensive coordinator and has put together strong defenses throughout the years, regardless of where Montreal's figured in the standings, but I think a lot of people didn't expect just kind of how bruising and how unforgiving and relentless this defense would be. And, you know, it's the way it works. You trust guys who look at the talent and look at how they think things are going to mesh and how the chemistry. I'm sure you talk to guys. I know you don't probably take their word for it. I'm not saying anyone would suggest Bear Woods should have left. I'm sure it stunned a lot of guys, but I think it's just a credit to, you know, the defense there that they recognize that they could pay, you know, someone less money and the drop off wouldn't be as high as maybe many perceived. And I think you're seeing it this year. This is a team that is not only limiting some of the best teams in points. I mean, if you look at the schedule, they're losing, yeah, 2 and 3, but they're only losing by 4 points to Edmonton, who's undefeated. You know, it's only 8 or 7 points to BC. They beat Calgary by 7 points. They only lost last week to the Ottawa Redblacks by 5 points. And in the fourth quarter, 1 point to the 0 points to the Redblacks, 1 point to Calgary, just a combined 1 point. I might be forgetting now, but it's just that's defense. And if you give your offense the opportunity to rest, to get on the field, you know, to just give them the opportunity, give them good field position, they're going to pay you back. But Montreal hasn't done that this year, and you just wonder, you know, when that's going to click, because Darian Durant isn't, you know, a new quarterback to this league. He can lead offenses, and we've seen flashes of it, but if like the Bombers, if they can put it together collectively on all three phases, they could be a dangerous team. We're waiting to see that from both clubs.
So what do you expect tonight, Jeff?
I think you can write the script pretty easily. I think Bombers are probably going to go up by a couple touchdowns. Maybe, you know, Montreal claw back, or the other way around. It just seems like every CFL game is the same. You know, no lead is safe. I'm expecting a close one. You know, the Bombers, I know they want to impress the fans at home. I know they want to get that home record obviously improved, but I'm just expecting a nail biter, another close one, and you know, that's just the way CFL is. That's why you got to love it. It's a small play clock, the 20-second play clock. You know, anyone can come back from anything, and yeah, I'm expecting a close one. You know, I'll go out there and say the Bombers edge them out, but just barely.
It'll be interesting. Thanks for this insight, Jeff. As always, enjoy the game.
Thanks, guys. You too. Talk to you later.
Take care, man.
Jeff Hamilton of the Winnipeg Free Press at Jeff K. Hamilton on Twitter.
It's a great point that he makes as far as just how close they escaped that week one game against Saskatchewan, but still only allowed Saskatchewan 16 points, only allow Edmonton 23, only allow BC 23, hold Calgary to 23, and then hold Ottawa to 24. Like, they're doing one heck of a job defensively. You really wonder what the boys under Matt Nichols, Paul Appelice, what will they be able to accomplish against this defense tonight?
It is an intriguing game for me. I think this is a lot of people maybe think Montreal
doesn't bring that much of a challenge, but I think they do. It's going to be really interesting, especially coming off that loss in BC, how the Blue Bombers handled tonight should be a good one. Now, we'll take a break, talk some golf, and get back into the game itself as we continue on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jam again. One of them.
That's a good range you cover, man, with like hardcore rock or some nice little hip hop here. I didn't know you had that in your game, man.
I like it all. I like music in general. It's just that the hair metal brought me up, made me the man I am today.
That forged you, huh? The steel?
Slightly pudgy, overweight, too many bad habits. That's what hair metal does for you when you're raised on it. We have two tickets to tonight's game between the Bombers and the Alouettes, 7:30 at Investors Group Field. You have to pick it up prior to our office closing at 4 at 1445 Pembina Highway. And if you can do that and you'd like to go, we'd like to get you there, courtesy of The Big Show and TSN 1290. 780-1290, 780-1290 for a pair of tickets to tonight's battle between the Bombers and the Alouettes. 12th caller through gets those. RBC Canadian Open is underway at Glen Abbey, potentially the final one at Glen Abbey. A real estate deal has been done for the course, so depending on when that starts, that transaction, this could be the last one, or they could squeeze one more in, but I think this will be the last one at Glen Abbey Golf Club for the RBC Canadian Open. Who do you like in this year's event?
How can't you like Dustin Johnson? Who in the field is going to get him? You're telling me that Matt Kuchar is going to be in a place mentally after what he endured this past weekend at the Open to come and challenge him? Maybe, but it's sure pretty easy to smell some sort of a drop-off, considerable one, I think, from Kuch. And then you look at the rest of the field. Snedeker's out, right? The rest of Retief Goosen going to rekindle some old magic, or maybe one of the Canadians step up to the plate here. I think it sets up like an absolute home run here for Dustin Johnson. You got on Canadian soil, you know that the great one's going to be on hand. I think it just sets up wonderfully for him to run away from this group.
Adam Hadwin finished fourth in 2011. It would be nice to see a Canadian, as always, take this event. But I'm with you. I thought a lot of people would be going Matt Kuchar, but I think this is made for Dustin Johnson. To sort of come in and take this event. Hey, who do you like in it?
I think Dustin Johnson will win by five.
Five,
yeah.
Eh?
Comfortably, yeah.
Although, I mean, if you take a look at the leaderboard right now, Smiley Kaufman is 5-under through six. So, you know, maybe there might be a bit of a charge from some unknowns on the leaderboard. But I would be shocked if Dustin Johnson's not in the final group on Sunday. And you know what? I think Adam Hadwin's going to have a nice round. I think he'll be somewhere in the top five. DJ kind of picked things up at the British Open as the tournament moved on, and I just don't really see a reason why he wouldn't be atop the leaderboard come Sunday, unless, you know, a guy like Smiley Kaufman throws up some ridiculous rounds, and I just don't really see a way Dustin Johnson loses the tournament.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite, too. I'm going with Dustin Johnson. It'd be nice to see Hadwin in there and competing. It is, when I say raining, it is pouring there right now. Like, it's not just drizzling and stuff. It is pouring rain at Glen Abbey right now as the golfers are out there. And
so you get both those rain gloves on, huh?
Both rain gloves. Some umbrellas are out. It looks beautiful, though. Ernie Els just hit one off a bit of the rough on the side of the fairway, and it looked like he hit a sprinkler the way the water came off the ground. So it is pouring at Glen Abbey right now. Bob Weeks just saying, Smiley Kaufman is off to a fast start, 5-under through six holes under a little rain. It's now, is he 6-under or 5-under still?
5-under through 6.
5-under through 6. But it is not just a little rain. It is pouring at Glen Abbey now as they continue to go at the RBC Canadian Open. Now that the sort of dust has settled, not that there was any dust at the British Open, at the Royal Birkdale, is it still, like, when I think about that a couple of days ago and that back nine, just unbelievable. Like, that still sticks out in my mind as one of the top back nines of a major I've ever witnessed.
Oh, yeah. And we that's, mean, every once in a while you're watching something and you realize that this is something everyone who enjoys and loves the game of golf will remember forever and ever. There's no way in the world you won't. I would love to have seen how the ratings climbed, where guys and gals watching that, seeing 13 unfold, and then you're calling, texting your buddies, whatever, you're checking out Twitter and seeing what's witnessing what's going on, and just how the numbers would have climbed, because it was something you had to get your way to a TV to watch. And then that was just sort of the introductory of the genius to follow. That, like, can you imagine? He came so close to holing on 14. It just bounces by. Like, everything there was just, it was magnificent. It was right there with the Tiger Woods chip at the Masters with that final rotation that we witnessed.
Easy, it's easy.
Certain things like that are forever forged into your brain and memory. And there's no question, all of us who love the game of golf will never, ever, ever forget what Jordan Spieth accomplished from 13 to 18.
No, and especially
in a lot of ways, it was better than anything Tiger Woods did.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that I will snap your microphone in half.
Whoa.
Yeah,
then but followed by your arms and legs.
The cool
did
thing,
you just take a swing.
The cool thing for me is that Spieth was on a path towards one of two ways: Jack Nicklaus, Greg Norman. Which way are you going to go? And Nicklaus had a similar kind of. It's funny, too, because Nicklaus had a similar kind of shot in one of the Opens in the 70s, I believe, where his ball ends up beside a car in the parking lot, and he ends up finding a way to save face there and go on to win the Open. But like, it's funny how history can be so close to completely doing a 180 there, and just what could have happened to Jordan Spieth if he doesn't save bogey there and his round derails and he drops another major. Like, he was teetering on the edge of just how do you come back from back-to-back collapses.
That's
like
right.
That in a major.
And it's like that is written in the stars somewhere, right? Like, somewhere, if you're a Trekkie, a parallel universe, that's what happened. He didn't recover on 13. He ended up with a triple or whatever, or even a bogey, and just the wheels fell off there. But it's like that is a... You go forward and you wonder, what is this young man now capable of going forward? How many majors will he rack up? Just exactly how remarkable will his legend grow? And that specific point in time will be considered the turning point in his career.
And we'll talk more about the Bombers and the Owls when Darren Bauming joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrities. September 22nd and 23rd, the money raised allows the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit tsn1290.ca. This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. And TSN1290.ca. Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open at 9 o'clock. Lots to talk about today, and love to get your opinions on who you have in tonight's Bombers-Owls battle. Connor McDavid's comments about the Olympics and if the players should be taking more responsibility for them not going. We'll decide and discuss that. And we ranked the forwards for all the teams in the Central Divisions, and we'll get your opinion on that as well and anything else in the Boss Pizza Fan Line at 9. Congratulations to Steve Radford. Steve, you are going to the Bombers-Alouettes game, courtesy of us here at TSN 1290. We hope you enjoy it tonight at Investors Group Field at 7 o'clock. Of course, Manuk Dentre Blue Bomber game day coverage starts at 5:30 with Troy Westwood, Chris Walby, and the host, Mr. Darren Bauming, who joins us now on The Big Show. How are you, Darren?
Hey, I'm well, guys. How are you this morning?
Good. Excited to see the game tonight and how it all plays out. And I guess we'll just start with a lot of talk about the defense. We've been talking about Matt Nichols and the offense, but we'll start with you and sort of the Rock Carmichael situation with Kevin Faugh coming in and basically Faugh getting healthy. How much do you expect to see him play tonight, if at all?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, what the leash on Rock Carmichael is. Now, based on reps in practice this week, it looks like Carmichael is going to remain in the starting lineup. He's, you know, still on that depth chart. Of course, that depth chart the team puts out every week, always with a grain of salt. You know, Mike O'Shea likes to use it as a little bit of subterfuge at times. You know, had Robert Porter listed as the strong side linebacker last week. He did not play there at all. It was Brandon Alexander who was listed as the cornerback. So always kind of just a, you know, a touch and go piece. But, you know, with the way Rock Carmichael has played, I know a lot of fans out there. We hear it on, you know, the Boston Pizza fan line after the game on our post-game show. I see it on my social media. I hear it from fans, you know, that I see at practice. Everybody's wondering, you know, how long Rock Carmichael will remain at, you know, defensive halfback. He's had his struggle. He's shown at times that he can, you know, that he's smart, that he can make some plays. And other times, you know, he's just been playing beat for touchdowns. So now that Kevin Fogg is healthy and they have somebody with experience that has played there before, it'll be interesting to see if, you know, they'll decide to pull the trigger if Rock Carmichael struggles. The Montreal Alouettes have a lot of, you know, talented receivers. They spread the ball out quite a bit. You know, they don't have a lot of guys. You know, they don't really have that big threat like a lot of other teams have. You know, B.J. Cunningham is the one player that comes to mind when I think about their receiving core, but it's a good thing now. I will say this, the Blue Bombers have a lot of confidence in Rock Carmichael. They want to see him succeed, and I truly believe that they have faith he can succeed. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, if he can turn his game around and finally find that success the Blue Bombers feel he can.
It is really interesting, DB, how this game tonight sets up. And with the struggles of the Bombers, and specifically with the fourth quarter, we were talking about the fourth quarter going into the game last week against BC, and then that differential made that much worse by BC outscoring the Bombers 18-0. It is now 42-9 that the Bombers have been outscored in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
I think that's just an like, it's strange sort of a aberration. I don't know how much stock to put in it to think that this offense specifically stalls in the fourth quarter or anything like that, but that is an alarming number at this point in time.
It is, and I think what makes people, and myself included, and I think yourself, you know, so perplexed about this Blue Bombers offensive production is that they score in bunches, and then they go absolutely cold. It's so hot and cold. You know, two touchdowns leading into the half, you know, in BC, two touchdowns and seven play drives, you know, both around 70 yards coming out of the half, and then five straight two and outs. You know, the sixth possession after that was an interception as Matt Nichols was really pressing, threw into double coverage, got picked off. If the Blue Bombers had scored, you know, a little bit more intermittently, if they didn't come in such bunches, I think maybe we would say, okay, this offense looks all right, you know, but it's just those long streaks. It's those periods that they go absolutely cold, struggling to score in the first quarter, struggling to score in the fourth quarter, and that's really momentum time, right? In the first quarter, that's when you can set the tone for the game, make the other team change their game plan, and press to stretch the field. In the fourth quarter, when you score, that's when you can change the momentum of a game late you know, make the opposing team say, okay, we need to respond here immediately and maybe change their game plan. So the fourth quarter, you mentioned 42-9 being outscored. I think that's the most concerning. Nearly every game in the CFL this year, or at least the greater majority, have come down to the final few minutes of the game. That's CFL football. You need to score in crunch time. The Blue Bombers haven't shown the ability to do that. The one positive I will draw in particular from last week is going 5-for-5 in the red zone. They took advantage of their opportunities when they were on the doorstep. Darvin Adams with a pair of touchdowns. Matt Nichols, you know, I thought was a really heady play with his 20-yard touchdown run. But it's about getting the defense off the field, allowing them, you know, every 90 seconds, every 45 to 90 seconds, the defense was back on the field in the second half. That's one way of many ways to give up a 15-point lead and be outscored 18-0.
Mike O'Shea was talking yesterday, Darren, about the quick turnaround and, of course, the physical aspects of that, but also in the fashion they lost. How has Justin Medlock been this week? Obviously one of the greatest kickers and still having a really good season, but, you know, the fake punt and then the missed field goal at the end. Any worries about him going into tonight's game, or how much is he looking forward to getting back on the field?
Yeah, there were some conversations this week amongst media members, myself. I really wondered what the fake punt did for Justin Medlock mentally. To see him miss from 50, hey, it happens. Everybody misses. But for it to be, you know, a kick that was short, I know Troy, you and I and Chris Walby were talking about it during the game when it happened, that it looked like he hit it clean. You know, it looked like a good kick, and it just fell essentially 1 yard short of the bar. Did that fake punt play and, you know, his decision to do that or pull the trigger or miss the throw to Derek Jones, did that get into his psyche? I didn't get a chance to talk to Justin Medlock this week. I know I heard the scrum with him, you know, with a crying baby in his arms, as, you know, he said no comment about the decision on that fake punt. But you don't become the best of all time. You don't become the most accurate kicker in the history of Canadian football by not being able to bounce back. I don't think I have any concern. I don't think anybody has any concern. It's going to be the same old Justin Medlock when they hit the field tonight.
What are your thoughts with regard to when you're talking about the sacks allowed? When the Bombers need to get Travis Lule looked really comfortable far too often in the pocket last week, DB, and now the Bombers defensively are up against a team that has only surrendered 3 sacks so far this season. That's quite remarkable in playing 5 games. You got to wonder how Richie Hall is going to try and disturb Darian Durant.
Well, and this is what's interesting, too, because coming into the season, a lot of people were saying, well, you know, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers have the best offensive line in the league. I'm not sure I've totally seen that. I think they've been very good. But there's no doubt that this Montreal Alouettes team, with the way they protect the quarterback, as you mentioned, Troy, and with the way that they run the football, averaging over 100 yards a game, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, Terrell Sutton or if it's Brandon Rutley. I think Rutley's going to be the starting quarterback this week with Sutton on the one game injured list. This is a very effective offense, and I think a big part of it is because they give Darian Durant time and they balance their attack with the run game. I thought it was really cool yesterday. Jacques Chapdelaine, head coach of the Alouettes, didn't hold a very traditional media session. Sat down, you know, with myself, Herb Zerkowski, Judy Owen, Jeff Hamilton, and we just kind of like, you know, kicked it back on a pile of chairs. We all just sat around very casually and you know, with our legs crossed and kind of just had a jam session, to put it one way. And, you know, he spoke for almost 20 minutes. And, you know, the one moment where I got an opportunity to ask him about what he sees from this Blue Bombers team, he said, well, I'm not just the head coach. I'm also an offensive coordinator. So I look at opposing defenses in a different light. And he says, Richie Hall, the front four and the front seven in particular, they don't send a lot of extra pressure a lot. They really rely on their front four, in particular, Jamal Westerman and Corey Johnson and Drake Nevis, to bring pressure alone. So he knows that he doesn't have to worry about too many exotic things coming from Richie Hall. They play a very strong zone, or at least when you don't send a lot of extra pressure, it allows you to play a more traditional strong zone, you know, with eight players back in coverage. So I'm curious to see how Montreal attacks Winnipeg, and I'm even more curious to see if Richie Hall is willing to be more aggressive, to throw something at Jacques Chapdelaine's and Montreal Alouettes' offense that maybe they're not ready for, something that they haven't seen on film. I think that's one way to counter an offense that is very balanced. And, you know, I mentioned the run game, but Darian Durant coming off a career high over 400 yards passing last week against the Ottawa Redblacks. This will be a battle for in the trenches because, yeah, this Montreal Alouettes offensive line, they're playing extremely well.
Darren Baume joining us on the Big Show today, teeing up the Bombers and the Owls. He'll be back to host Manuk Dencher Blue Bomber Game Day tonight at 5:30 with Walby and Westwood as well. How do you think Coach O'Shea has come along so far this year when we talk about, you know, everything that's gone on, not only last game, but we were talking about the offense and Matt Nichols and the defense, special teams, everything. Where's Mike O'Shea so far this year, 4 games into the season?
Well, you know, again, I'll refer back to what Jacques Chapdelaine had to say about, you know, Mike O'Shea and this Blue Bombers team. He feels, you know, Jacques Chapdelaine's been around Canadian football for a long time, whether it was the head coach of the Laval Rouge or in U Sports or, you know, and his time running the offense in Montreal and other teams in the CFL. And that's, you know, he sees continuity and consistency from this Blue Bombers team. And that all stems from the head coach. He has really stabilized things. It's anytime opposing teams come to Winnipeg, you can talk to them about, you know, what they've seen from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers 3, 4, 5 years ago versus the past year. And you could hear it in, you know, in Jacques Chatelain's comments, how different this Blue Bombers team is from years past. It all starts and ends with the head coach. And I feel, you know, Mike O'Shea may be still making some decisions that have people questioning, members of the media, fans, you know, his in-game decision-making. But it's like any young player in the league or any young coach in the league. It takes time. I know people don't want to hear that now in their fourth, you know, Mike O'Shea's fourth year coaching this team, but it seems every single year he feels more comfortable in his skin. Every year, every session with the media, he seems more comfortable in speaking about his football team. It's just kind of been that slow but continually and constant progression as a head coach. This team is very well coached. They just need to be able to put it together and find that consistency that's going to give them success. 500 football is about what I would expect from the Blue Bombers right now. In my opinion, their two losses this year have come against the two best teams in the league in the Calgary Stampeders and the BC Lions. They need to exert their authority, show people that they're better than 2-2, and beat teams like the Montreal Alouettes tonight.
I tell you, DB, I agree with you that you got a team coming in from that pathetic division over there in the East, and the Alouettes, after Cavillo and all the rest of it, they, you know, they should be in shambles to some degree, but it's pretty darn daunting when you look and they've played Edmonton. They allowed them 23 points. They played BC. They allowed them 23 points. They played Calgary. They allowed them 23 points. That is remarkable. Like, this defense, this is real hardcore here. And I like Mark Fulton. I say a tweet to you and to Marshall Ferguson, I believe, saying that, to me, Montreal makes you play ugly. They muddy things up. And for sure, a defense of this nature here, they're going to, like, that, to have the range, they're all five games. The range is 17 to 24 points allowed. This is going to be one heck of a test here for the Bomber offense.
Well, I remember growing up in Winnipeg, you know, going to the games, watching you play, watching a lot of others play, through the mid-2000s in particular when I was a little bit older. And the rivalry that is real between Winnipeg and Montreal, I always had tons of fun in those games. I think it had a little bit to do with some of the crowd being peppered in with French connections and us being in a bilingual province and city like Winnipeg and Manitoba. But yeah, the Alouettes are built fundamentally very strong. Noel Thorpe, I don't think it's a stretch if I would say he's the best defensive coordinator in the league. So you have a strong scheme. They game plan extremely well. Matt Nichols talks about how they throw a lot of things at you and work to confuse you on offense quite effectively. But they also play extremely hard nose. They're very physical. They're not afraid to hit you in the mouth. And, it will be interesting because they've been so effective this year against opposing offenses. What they need to do, the Blue Bombers need to play the type of football that they play. That's force turnovers and try to get into the head of their opponent. If they can play effective special teams and force a turnover or two and have a short field for Matt Nichols to work with, we saw they were 5-for-5 against a very good BC Lions defense in the red zone. That's the way they have to play. I don't think the Blue Bombers can rely on going blow for blow with Montreal. They need to find a way, similarly to Mike O'Shea, you know, trying 2, 3, 4 trick plays a game sometimes. They need to find a way, to get that edge, to swing the momentum. And ultimately, I think it's going to be a takeaway in the football game that will allow the Blue Bombers to be on the doorstep, score when they can and take advantage.
You know, boys, how in the hell do you lose a game? You go 5-for-5 in the red zone. That's really messed up.
That is a telling stat for sure in that game. That is bizarre. Darren, we appreciate it as always. Thanks for doing this, and we'll listen for you at 5:30 when the Minuit Dentures Blue Bomber game day gets started tonight.
Looking forward to it, guys. Always good. Take care.
DB.
And we'll take a break and tee up the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a part of the iHeartRadio Network. Download the iHeartRadio app and listen to us on all your favorite devices, or go to the Perfect Four section and choose from hundreds of channels to suit any mood or music taste. Your music, your stations, always free. Download the iHeartRadio app and get streaming. The Big Show on TSN 1290, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki on a Minute Denture Blue Bomber game day. Bombers and Owls, we'll start there. Gentlemen, who do you like tonight?
How dare you ask this question?
Who are you picking? I want the truth. By the way, The Departed was on last night. That's why I'm a little tired. I'll watch 5 minutes turned into 3 hours.
I really, you look at it and it's like, yeah, the Bombers, this is a game where the Bombers have to win. Kind of, in a way, right? Like, they only really need to win two of their next three to be 4-3, but they're at home here. And I'm just scared to the dickens about this team. I always take strong D over an offense, and you got an offense here with the Bombers that they're great so far this year of putting the ball in the end zone, but from an overall yardage sense and all the rest of it, they've struggled to a pretty strong degree. And then you got the Owls who... Boy, oh boy, they don't get a lot of pressure to the quarterback, but they're just damn good. When you hold Edmonton, BC, and Calgary, all three of those teams, to 23 points, am I supposed to accept that the Bomber defense, that is the second worst in points surrendered, giving away, I think it's 32.8 points per game, will the Bomber defense hold Darian Durant and an improving Alouette's offense to less than 23 points? Boy, I don't know. I might change my pick come Bomber game day later on this afternoon, but I'm going to say the Bombers win a real close one, and Justin Medlock hits a game winner this time around. He hits from somewhere just inside of 50 yards to win this game tonight.
Damn it.
Inside of 50.
Yeah, that was
my 48-yarder right hash.
Oh, okay.
Well, picking the hash.
I mean, that's a little ridiculous. I have Medlock hitting a 40-yarder for the win. And you know what? I think the Bombers' defense matches up better with Montreal than they have with other teams because the Owls rely on the run a little bit more, and I think the Bombers' run defense will do enough to at least limit what Terrell Sutton and Montreal does on the ground. But I like the Bombers' offense. I think they'll have a solid game, too. I'll go 30-27 and a Medlock late one to win it.
I think defense wins championships and offense gets you to the playoffs in order to win that championship. I'm going the Bombers tonight by 10, and I think the Bombers sack Darian Durant 3 times.
You are funny. That is a beauty line there. I think defense wins championships and offense gets you to the championship. Is that what you
gets
said?
Gets you to the playoffs.
Right, okay.
And then the defense wins you that championship.
Huh.
That's what I think.
That's cool, man. It's cosmic.
So I'll take the Bombers by 10 tonight.
And, whoa! And seriously?
Yeah, and 3 sacks on Darian Durant at IGF.
That's a match. Look at that. That's a massive game by the Bombers.
Yeah, that's a good game.
That's some big yikes on your
steps
part, man.
Steps forward taken tonight at Investors Group Field.
Nice. Are you going to be at the Rum Hut?
I will be.
Were you already there?
You and Huss?
I was gonna
go hunting it.
I was gonna go watch the first half in the press box tonight, but then poor Huss has no one to go to the game with tonight, so I will be departing at halftime. And I don't know if when I depart to go home and watch the second half to get a good night's sleep for the Big Show tomorrow, if I walk past the Rum Hut or not. I don't know.
You gonna wear your Westwood jersey?
I don't know where we're sitting. My Westwood jersey. I'll wear the Jim McMahon jersey. Central Boss Beats fan line, who do you have in the game tonight? 780-1290, my Westwood jersey. I might have a helmet with one bar on it. That's about as close to Westwood jersey as I'll get. Central Division forward rankings. I went Minnesota, Winnipeg, Dallas, St. Louis, Chicago, Nashville, Colorado. We got to go, guys, but rank your forwards real quick for everybody before we open the Boss Pizza family.
I think up, down, front to back, I think Minnie's got the most impressive overall dangerous and sound forwards in the Central.
You got to play defense as well as a forward, which is why I have the Jets third behind Dallas, which is kind of ironic, in Minnesota.
Who do you like in the Central for forwards? Who has the best core? Who has the worst? We'll go through the rankings. Who do you have tonight between the Bombers and the Owls? And Connor McDavid wanted to go to the Olympics. He's upset. Poor Connor. Your thoughts on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Another one of my jams, speaking of a different genre.
This is the worst. The 80s side to side.
Oh, boy. That's what it is. The grade 7 side to side. Did you get a Slurpee? No, not yet. Good music, though. Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on tomorrow's Big Show, TSN1290.ca. To nominate your sports star for that $50 Subway gift card. The Boss Pizza fan line is open, 780-1290. You can also text us now at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Who do you have in tonight's Bombers-Alouettes game? Both my co-hosts have the Bombers by 3 on a Medlock last-second field goal. I have the Bombers by 10 tonight over the Alouettes. Also, Connor McDavid, not happy about the players in the National Hockey League not going to the Olympics. And I, to steal a line from Troy Westwood, dare say, don't the players have a responsibility in this well? And if they really, really, really wanted to go, they could take that extra deal on the CBA. It's interesting how this has played out to me. And what do you think on that? And then, of course, we've ranked our forwards in the Central Division. Consensus Minnesota number one in the division for depth and everything else that we look for, but Winnipeg is up there in all of ours top three, I believe, considering the skills they have. Where do you see the Central Division forwards lining up? 780-1290. Ron, you're on the Big Show to kick us off today. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Morning.
So I got a buddy who we talk sports all the time, and when it comes to Bombers, he's always all about, I don't know why this has come up before. And Jim, I think you may have mentioned it about O'Shea not taking his job seriously, wearing shorts on the sidelines. And this is one thing that he always brings up. Why is that so important? You know, I don't get that. Like, he's a coach. He's out there. He's doing his job. And maybe we questioned some of the calls from last week, especially that 3rd and 15. I'm still not sure who to blame on that one.
Should be. That's Justin Medlock, period, end of story.
Okay, so it's not the coach, right,
no.
Troy?
No, hell no.
Okay, I tried explaining that to him, and he's not. No, I don't believe that, and he thinks that Matt Nichols is just an average quarterback, and yet we scored 5 times when we were in the red zone, and I know it stalled at certain times in the game, but I think Matt Nichols, I don't know if he's an elite quarterback right up there with Jonathan Jennings or Caleros or whoever else you want to put up there, Durant. But I think he manages the game well, and I don't see a problem here. But he keeps on harping that we need to change the coaching. And I just wanted to know what your comments about maybe getting a new head coach, which I don't agree with. But I'll let you guys go. Have a good one. Take care.
Thanks, Ron. This is breaking news, by the way. Thanks for the call, Ron. The Montreal Canadiens have officially announced just moments ago that the Andre Markov will not return next season. So the 38-year-old defenseman who made 5.75+ last year, looking for a two-year deal at $6 million, and they've been trying to work something out with him. The Montreal Canadiens announcing, as per Amanda Stein from our affiliate station in Montreal, TSN 690, announcing Andre Markov will not return.
That's not news to Habs fans. That one was on the wall and obvious. Yeah,
makes sense. He moves the puck. Can't have any of that in Montreal.
Hey, and I'll
so
say this.
About that.
I agree with the shorts on Mike O'Shea. It's a bunch of crap. How can he be taken seriously as a head coach? Same with Bill Belichick. He's an idiot, too, for wearing that hoodie all the time. What kind of clown coach is he?
That's awful.
I think it's stupid. So who cares what he wears?
Yeah,
be comfortable, and who whipped he do?
It's interesting because even when Farhan Larji tweeted out on Friday's game, I'm still not convinced that that fake punt came from Mike O'Shea. I retweeted that out. There was lots of people that weighed in. Here come the Mike O'Shea defenders and the Mike O'Shea this and the Mike O'Shea that. I don't get the first 2 years, and I understand how Mike O'Shea is extremely loyal to some players at the get-go, and how people don't like the fact that he's never going to say that player needs to be better or this guy or that and always fall. I get how that rubs people the wrong way sometimes. But for the people, and I heard this the other day too, like they want a new coach. And Kevin Olszewski was in here and he was laughing, shaking his head, going, yeah, this team doesn't need stability and any long-term, you know, they need to change everything every 2 to 3 years because that's worked so well in the past 25 years or so. Whether you like Mike O'Shea or not, he got the team in the playoffs. And the fact that he wears shorts, I never understood that to me. You can dislike anything if you want about Mike O'Shea. You don't have to like the guy, but you have to understand where he's taken this team and where they are right now at 2-2 going into a season coming off the playoff appearance. The whole idea of because he wears shorts and all that is you bring up Belichick. It's ridiculous. I never understood that.
Yeah, it is absolutely ridiculous. And who in the hell can be talking about firing Mike O'Shea? That's just the most. That is just flat out crazy talk. The team goes 11-7 last year. You got guys signing in Winnipeg who are free agents to play for Mike O'Shea. You got all the players wanting to, in a second, they'll jump on a grenade for the guy. It just, that is absolute crazy talk. If you've got some sort of gauge or some sort of negative feeling about Mike O'Shea, he's not going anywhere.
And if you want to call in, please do so and tell us why, because for a guy who came in, took 3 years, got the team into the playoffs last year, is .500 right now, arguably could be 3-1, and some people argue, well, maybe it's because of him that they're not 3-1. Whatever. Like, let's hear from you, 780-1290. I never understand that either, why you would fire a guy who literally took a team to the playoffs last year and looks to have a better team on paper this year at 2-2. Thanks for the call, Ron. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Norm, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Well, thanks, you.
Hey, it's going to be a great game today, I think. This is the game I've been really waiting for because Montreal is such a tough team, whatever, on the lines, whatever. This is going to be an ultimate game. Everybody should go out and watch this game because this is where we're going to see the offensive line and the defensive line, what they're made of, how much power they got, how much determination they got. There's going to be probably blood stuff on the field today, I do believe this. And not only that, I think the Bombers are going to come out ahead because they know what it feels like to have locked that fourth quarter in BC. BC took it to them. They punched him in the nose in the fourth quarter. We got to see the Bombers punch back today, and they're going to win this game, guys. And I'll hang up and have a good day.
Yeah, you too, Norm. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, the BC Lions defense cranked up, and you got to give them some level of respect. But when you're talking about an outrageous play call to try and fake that punt, and then with the Nichols interception at 1:21, basically handing them the game with the short field goal to take the lead, and then Medlock missing the game-tying field goal, it's BC Lions didn't punch the Bombers in the nose so much as the Winnipeg Blue Bombers dropped a 45-pound plate on their toe. Like, they served up the game to BC in the fourth quarter. No, I don't think the other way around.
Thanks for the call, Norm. We appreciate it. The Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. This is also breaking news. Timo Salani has won his first professional tennis match today in Helsinki on the ITF Senior Tour 45+.
How cool is that? Really?
He has like the ultimate blessed life, doesn't he?
It's amazing.
First professional tennis match. I remember when I emceed the Rady JCC Sportsman Dinner this year, and I first met him, and he said, so how's the format going to go? Wait. You want to have a beer? Yeah, okay, Timo. Okay, let's have a beer and talk. Okay. Won his first professional match today in Helsinki on the ITF Senior Tennis Tour 45+. Reminds me of my soccer days, and guys still text me, are you 45 yet? Because that's when you'll peak. You got to get in that 45+ league at 45. You'll be at your peak.
It's 40 here, not 45.
Oh, is it 40?
Yeah.
Well, then I'm way past it. Yeah. I'm over. Yeah, my career passed me over again.
You're done.
I'm done. I got to go join the ITF Senior Tour like Timo and play tennis now. Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Alan, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, fellas.
Morning.
Hey, you know, there's always going to be guys that phone in and say stuff about get rid of this guy and get rid of that guy, especially, you know, Coach O'Shea and Maurice. You know, they're out there. You can't waste your time getting all worked up about these clowns because they just don't get it. And, you know, you make a great point. These guys inherited a mess when they got together. Miller, O'Shea, Walters, and they're building this team. They're building it from scratch. They're putting together, you know, Canadian talent. It's getting better. You make the good point that they won, 11 games last year?
Yeah.
And they're 2-for-2 this year instead of 4-0. What were they, 1-4 last year to start out of the gate?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All games close except for the Calgary one. I was the guy that came on and said they were going to ass-kick them. I take full responsibility for that, bold prediction, but it obviously backfired on me. That's too bad. I think this is the year that I've seen the most parity of the CFL ever. Every team can win, no matter what. Just because Hamilton's 0-4 doesn't make them an 0-4 team. I think they're a lot better than that. It's just one of those years where it's going to be a dogfight every game. So I like the 10-point win you've got there, JT, and I hope we win tonight.
Thanks for the call, Alan. We appreciate it.
Thanks, man.
On the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Who's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line?
Let's squeeze in Jay.
Jay, we'll get you in before our break. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
Great. Let's make this quick then. Here's why I don't think Medlock's to blame. So he gets a green light on that. He gets a green light on that from the coach. Now, it's a simple situation there. As a coach, you have to know when you tell a guy, hey, listen, this isn't the time for you to use this. You're going to kick that ball away. And so that's why I think the mistake with that kick totally falls on O'Shea.
No coach does that, though, man. And it's not like it's...
Troy?
Pardon?
Isn't that coaching? Don't you control your players, or are the players controlling you?
But no coach ever needs to in all my years there were green lights, and it's not like he's running out onto the field for that punt and O'Shea's screaming green light. You know, you got a green light, or reminding him that he's got a green light here. A green light is something probably from to start the season. There's a chance it was only specific to the BC Lions, talked about in meetings leading up to the game. You go into the game and saying that, or to start the season even, if we ever have this sort of situation, this formation in front of us where we've got an extra guy out there, they've only got 2 to our 3, you've got the green light to make that throw. It's something you would talk about early on, even in practice, if it ever unfolded, you could throw and that sort of thing. If you recognize it, that all of the responsibility falls on the veteran player to understand the situation of the game, where it doesn't matter what they're offering you out there, you don't take advantage of that green light. Like, no, and I said this somewhat in jest on Monday after the game, but I mean it in a big way, that only a kicker would make a decision like that. Like, that's such a fundamental football element get to that decision where you wouldn't even think about going green light, at, you know, with 8 minutes left on your own 26, 8-point lead, like all those things. It's an absolute no-brainer that you'd give that up. Medlock just made a real critical error. And there's, I'm telling you, from a former player, a guy that had a green light for all 18 years that I played in certain situations, whether punting or on kickoffs and on field goal, that is 100% on the shoulders of the player.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much.
Okay, take care, man.
Thanks, Jay. We appreciate the call. Yeah, I agree totally 100%. The green light is in general, and it's up to the player to know that even if I think the guy's open, yep, up by eight in my own end with this much time on the clock, it's just not a good decision, even if I think it's there. I agree with that. Thanks for the call, Jay. We appreciate it. We'll get to more of your calls on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, when we come back to the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
780-1290 on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. If you want to weigh in on the conversation, or text us at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Matty Ice on Twitter, 2310 Als. Nichols throws three picks, no TDs. This D is way too much for a below average quarterback.
Gee whiz. Take a happy pill. Maybe.
He's not Jim Toth.
If I had to push my chips in that direction, or you said the Bombers win by 10 and you had a couple other doozies mixed into
10 and three sacks on Darian Durant.
Yeah. I'm going to go towards, I think, the Bombers losing 23-10 before I'd say that they win by 10 tonight. I just, that the Al defense is no joke. And you hold Edmonton, BC, Calgary all to 23 points. That's hardcore. That ain't going anywhere. That travels.
Lefty Carroll at Blue B Fan, longtime listener. I bet Medlock doesn't miss a field goal again this season.
Yeah, you'd be foolish to bet against that.
David Asplin has said he's texted in his version of his six-pack, so we'll get that at 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. Miles has sent a nice picture of you in a suit with a lovely young lady and Bufante hair, and you look like a game show host. I like
My hair looks like your hair there, doesn't it?
I just retweeted it. It does a little bit. You look stunning, to be honest with you.
Gee whiz, thank you.
Lefty Carroll also said, I don't care about O'Shea's shorts, Tim Burke's visor. That's another story.
Poor old Tim Burke. I had the promise of one day becoming a head coach somewhere in the CFL, only to accept the job here under Joe Mack and the old, I love the Gary Lawless quote, 10 pounds of crap in a 9-pound bag.
That's how I might feel tomorrow after the rum hype. Mighty Ice, Matty Ice now weighs back in because Bo Levi Nichols, which is one of the best handles on Twitter, Bo Levi Nichols at not Matt Nichols, says Bombers win 35-31. Matty Ice responded, no chance Bombers score 35 against that D.
Real hard to imagine. Like, boy, oh boy, would they need – it would be a spectacular offensive night. And when you look at what – like, Montreal in their five games this year, everyone, Saskatchewan surrendered 17, Edmonton surrendered 23, BC surrendered 23, Calgary surrendered 23, and against Ottawa surrendered 24. So all of a sudden, a massive explosion tonight. Maybe. Not likely. Yeah.
27 or 30 would be an excellent night for the Bombers offense, which is that's kind of where I have them pegged, though. I think they're kind of rounding into form nicely here, and I do think the first quarter thing is a bit of a concern, but the fourth quarter thing to me is it's a bit of a mirage. Just because if you come out hot to start the second half, it means you're adjusting well to what the defensive coordinator is throwing at you after they've seen you for 30 minutes. And I just feel like at some point they're going to finally break through here. And TJ Thorpe looked real good. I really liked his game against BC. And he's kind of giving Matt Nichols a bit of a safety valve. And if he's able to get some room, I think he can make some plays and get some first downs.
Where I really like the Owls is having Chip Cox in sort of a halfback spot the way they do. That is spectacular. That dude's ferocious. Fast, smart, good in coverage, and nasty. The one thing, when you look at the Al's defense, they got some real snarly sons of biscuits in there, man. When you're talking Cox, and you're talking Hebert, and you're talking Bowman, Whew, they're just. I remember one time specifically with Chip Cox after a punt, we're going down, and we're running down the field, and he's beside me, and I was full of pee and vinegar at that point in time, and we're about the same size, myself and Chip Cox, and I saw him there, and I took a few steps and leaned into him, and he absorbed the shot, and he looks at me as we're still jogging the field, and he goes, "All right, cuz," and then he came right at me. It was just something I didn't want to engage in, probably if I had half a brain. And the rest of the game, he was just coming at me night and day. He's a good player.
780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversation with Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show on the Boston Pizza fan line. Oscillating Jets fan at Mitchell Barton J says, "I understand a quote-unquote green light concept, but there has to be clear restrictions put in place. That's on the coach."
No. The thing is, when you've got a veteran player, the veteran player should have basically the brain to everybody in football. Like, this isn't an uncommon thing. Every coach, every team at any sort of level, college, even college, they existed for me as a punter and a kicker. Man, you have to understand, you need to have a brain. A coach, imagine every single time going out in the field, the coach is telling you whether or not the green light, hey, think of the game situation here. Green lights are off. So that just never, ever, ever, ever happens. This is a football normality that a veteran player you have to be able to depend on your veteran players to make decent, and this isn't even a sound or a decent decision, really, right? Like, it's an absolute no-brainer.
It's so bizarre that people want to put this on Mike O'Shea.
Yeah.
This is what I'll say to that. The general green light on the fake punt, if you're sitting at home on the couch watching this or wherever you are, and you know that you shouldn't do a fake punt in that situation, you can't tell me that the player himself shouldn't know that.
10 times over.
If you're a fan at home watching and know that you don't do a fake punt in that situation, and now you're telling me that you have to clearly indicate to the player punting that he shouldn't, when you as a fan know that? Come on. The player needs to know that, and it doesn't need a coach to actually run out or grab him before he goes out there and say, "I know there's a general green light here, but please don't fake punt when we're up by 8 at this point in the game.
Yep.
Please, I'm taking the green light away." Yep. You've got to be kidding me, you're putting that on the head coach.
Yep.
If you as a fan know that's the absolute wrong time to do a fake punt, so does Justin Medlock, and the coach doesn't need to clarify that to me. That's not coaching there at all.
That's
just the player being aware of the situation and what the limitations are. We'll take more of your calls on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. And, of course, Twitter, if you want, at Jim Toth Sports, at Troy Westwood, and at Brandon_Rewicki. More of you next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for the 2017 Canada Summer Games from July 28th to August 13th. All eyes will be on Winnipeg as thousands of athletes from across Canada come to compete. This is the country's largest multi-sport and cultural event for young athletes. 16 sports and over 250 events. The 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games will welcome over 20,000 visitors, and they are arriving. Canada Summer Games tweeting out all morning. Team Ontario has arrived at the James Richardson Airport, and the rest of the provinces will today as well. The opening ceremonies will be tomorrow night, Friday, July 28th at MTS Center. The closing ceremony Sunday, August 13th at Investors Group Field. And tickets to both are still available at Ticketmaster.ca. And 11 days and over 150 artists, fireworks every night. The Manitoba Liquor and Lotteries Canada Games Festival is the place to be for fun and entertainment between July 29th and August 12th. There will be something for everyone as we showcase the talent and diversity of Manitoba's finest festivals and homegrown performers like the Crash Test Dummies with the Winnipeg Symphony Orchestra and Fred Penner. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for the full festival lineup. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 with Jim, Troy, and Brandon on the Big Show. And Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Jimmy, how you doing?
Good, thanks. You?
Troy, good to have you back. Listen, just wanted to talk a bit about green lights in sports, and particularly in this instance with Medlock. So we have it's completely different in the Medlock situation. I mean, this isn't getting a green light 3-0 when you're hitting a baseball. This is huge, and so you have to use your head, you know, and I have to think that, you know, if you're, when you have to be on the same page with everybody on the field, at that point, and in that kind of spot in the game, I don't think you ever even consider the green light, you know. I think if it, I mean, it, when I was in basketball, I remember in high school, was having a pretty good game, and my coach said, you know, I had put one in from the corner, and this is, I mean, I'm dating myself, but this is prior to the three-point line ever being considered being put in by in Winnipeg. So my coach took me inside and said, you know what, yeah, you got the green light there. So, of course, I took the chance, and I'd take two steps across center, and I just start tossing bricks, right? So the assistant coach comes up and he says, listen, yeah, I talked to the coach and that light has gone. It's skipped amber and gone straight to red.
But you know what? In the same scenario, if you're up by 10 and there's a minute 30 left, even though you have the green light, you also probably are aware that you don't need to shoot anymore. Like, the key is to hold the ball.
Exactly.
Why come up the court with 3 seconds off the clock and take a shot just because you have the green light? In the exact same scenario, you're also aware, even with the green light, that you just hold the ball for the 24-second clock and run it out because you're up by 10.
Yeah. No, I fully appreciate that. You have to use your head in that situation. I think, and I mean, does anybody truly believe that it was O'Shea that made that call anymore? Is that even a thought in our heads?
Early, like last week, people were still possibly leaning on that. I would hope anyone that's heard me talk about it would just understand. Like, it's an absolute. I'm not giving my opinion here. It's a guaranteed 100% absolute football thing that unfolded there, and it's all on Medlock.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that because I just can't see that call ever being made in that situation. You know what I mean?
To me, it's, and I totally agree with Troy, and I don't know the intricacies like he said. I thought when it happened, I go, there's no way that you called that play. I mean, I wondered, but then as I just thought about it, because to me, it's just Medlock going, I can see, like, trying to make a play. You know how athletes sometimes want to make a play when they just need to do the right thing? And they want to sort of, you get a first down there, you think you're doing something when it's just not the smart. Like I said at the start of the week, I think even if he converts that and they get a first down, at the end of the game, Mike O'Shea still sits down and go, Justin, like, even though that worked, don't ever do that again.
Yeah, your risk reward just isn't weighed in your favor there, you know what I mean? But, I mean, it'll be interesting tonight. I think that they're up against it. Although, Jim, I do love the idea of the three-sack night for the Bomber D. I like that because, you know, I think that these things happen that way. You know, always the unexpected stuff, and I can see the Bomber D actually having a big game tonight in terms of sacks. I still think they're going to give up a ton of yards, but I think that the D-line will actually play pretty well tonight, and they may really pressure Durant quite a bit.
For those listening at home, when it's a Thursday night game, I leave at halftime in order to get some sleep and watch the end of the game for Friday's show. Don't think if the Bombers are down by 30 and they don't have a sack yet, that's why I'm leaving.
The Bombers so far in 4 games only have 7 sacks, and the Owls so far in 5 games have only surrendered 3 sacks. So if the Bombers get 3 sacks tonight, it'll be quite an accomplishment.
I'm looking at garbage time. Something to make it happen. Boss Pizza Fan Line, thanks for the call, Rick. 780-1290 on The Big Show. Who's next?
We'll get Bud to hang on, but let's go to Jim here.
Jim, you're on The Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I promise I won't make any comments about Jim Toast here today. so don't get triggered happy.
Fair enough.
Anyways, I guess the thing is that what I've noticed, like, one of the plays, not only do you wonder, do most people not feel that was appropriate call, regardless of who made it, I guess, in the following drive, where the Bombers moved the ball downfield quite effectively, like, I think we've seen some plays that the Bombers have done late in the games where fans and people have questioned whether that play should have been called. And I guess on the ensuing drive where the Bombers, you know, moved the ball down the field, the last play just before the kick, instead of throwing a ball, you know, on an out pattern where the receiver's either going to, he's going to be able to step out of bounds and kill the clock, the Nichols threw the ball to the running back, and the good fortune was that he happened to get tackled with, I think, 2 seconds left on the clock. And I guess last year in the playoffs, we saw a situation where against BC, I believe that that the coach indicated that they should kick the ball. I think it was a 60-yard kick when he still had time on the clock to try to move the ball, you know, to get another first down. And so I think we've seen some questionable calls coming. And I guess I don't know if the coach, you know, Troy has indicated that that O'Shea just throwing himself on the sword to protect the heat going on to the player. But if the parameters were set, a green light with parameters, don't try it, don't fake the punt when you're inside your own 40. If the parameters are clear and the player doesn't hold to those parameters, I don't think it's good for O'Shea to take the blame, because then it creates confusion in the fans' mind, and so the criticism is going to go at the coach. And you kind of wonder if the parameters were set and the player did not abide by those parameters, you wonder what kind of confusion it might or doubt it might place in the player's mind. So I don't think the Bombers coaching staff has really done an excellent job in those situations over the year, and I think that's why some of the heat is coming.
Jim, let me ask you something. What impact in the dressing room or locker room do you think it has on the players or the team that the fans have a certain understanding of Mike O'Shea? Nothing.
I don't know if it.
Nothing.
I don't think it does. But yep. But if you have a player that you know is if the parameters were that clear for the kicker, and he didn't abide by them. In your own view, Troy, then he's made an obvious error.
Yep.
And I guess my thought is, if you've got a player that doesn't stick to clear parameters, then there's a problem there.
But it's not a real problem. It's a problem is something that needs to be dealt with and sort of changed or fixed. We're talking about a catastrophic error on the part of Justin Medlock, the kind of mistake like some you make in whatever you might be doing in life, you make it once and you never ever make it again. This is a football life lesson for Justin Medlock, and I guarantee you'll never see him make a mistake in that magnitude or of that vein ever again. And I think it's people have got to understand, and I heard Jeff Hamilton discuss this a little bit, being frustrated that Mike O'Shea, that basically you're not getting the truth here from the coach in what transpired and all the rest of it. But it's not like Mike O'Shea is an elected official. This isn't a government official that where you need transparency and, you know, that you deserve that from a public figure here. This is a head coach whose primary job is to win games, and somewhere not all that far down that list is to protect the locker room. And the players love it and expect it in a huge way when a coach steps forward and takes the blame and protects his players. Every single guy in that locker room is aware when he does that. And as much as guys in that locker room might be looking at Medlock going, what in the hell were you thinking there, right? And no one would say that to him, but guys for sure thinking that. But they would also be looking at the way Mike O'Shea is dealing with it going, that's awesome that he's stepping up there and taking the blame like that. And, you know, O'Shea doesn't owe it to the media or the fans or nobody to the secrets of what's happening, the behind-the-scenes thing, and as to whose blame it was. Whose blame it was really doesn't matter at the end of the day, right? They'll deal with it in-house. They'll make sure that the lesson's absolutely learned. And in some part, it's a real important part of the field general as the head coach that you're willing to step up like that for your players and take the blame. It does a lot to add to the leadership qualities of the head coach.
Thanks for the call, Jim. We appreciate it. We got to get to more of them. Bud, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Yeah, that was a flashback there. I was Jim, my coach, from when I played for the Mustangs, and prior to that, with Glenley Community Club. So, holy crow. Anyway, what I wanted to say was I thought Metlock shouldn't be to blame on this. What an opportunity. Who would have thought someone would fake a punt and pass in that situation where you're up, you're in your own end? It was a perfect scenario to do it. The element of surprise. The only thing that I wondered, number zero, who is he? That's Jones?
The intended receiver, yeah.
Yeah.
Derek Jones.
He was not looking for the ball. If he would have had his shoulder turned and saw that the ball was coming, he would have stopped and readjusted to Metlock's pass, and he would have probably stopped that interception,
well,
got the ball, and possibly tackled right there. I don't know if that would have given him a first down.
No, even if you stopped the interception, there's no way he was catching the ball, and even if you stopped the interception, the Bombers still lose the ball on turnover of downs, right? The way that played. And the reason why he didn't look back for it is, you know, if Medlock is out on the field like that, and if you got a green light play, there's an audible that you're screaming to make sure everyone on the field is there with you. And my assumption is that either A, Jones didn't hear the audible, which I doubt, because guys will echo it, everyone knows, or Medlock forgot to call it out. And I kind of lean more towards that. So, and nonetheless, the initial, when you're saying, well, the element of surprise is there, that is superseded by the fact of the game situation. When you're talking about being on your own 26, 8.5 minutes left, up by 8, it's 3rd and 15. That's a no, I don't care. Of course you're going to have someone by surprise in that situation, because you're out of your mind if you're pulling off a fake. Right? So it was a colossal error of epic magnitude here by Medlock. It's a one and done kind of thing. You'll never, ever, ever see him make a mistake of that nature again, ever. I guarantee that. And he's got to move on. I'm sure he's moved on from it in a huge way. Everybody learns a massive lesson here, and you're never going to see it again. So it's a one and done. It cost them. They had a chance to tie the game, last play of the game, and they failed at that. But it's a huge mistake. You got to accept it and move on and kind of forget about making the mistake, but learn the lesson.
Thanks for the call, Bud, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. We'll get you more of your calls when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca, Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And Ron, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for the call. I wonder, Troy, if I can make a quick comment and, more importantly, then ask a question. And the comment would be, does the buck not stop with the coach? And I don't see Mark Pressman teams or Calgary Stampeder teams or Bill Belichick teams, players making really dumb mistakes, and yet that's what we seem to be witnessed with Vancouver. But that's just that's an aside. My real question is, because you had personal experience with a particular coach, and if I got it right, is Jeff Reinbold the defensive coordinator with Hamilton now? And are they not have a record of the worst defense in the CFL right now? And I'm wondering if there's a connection there. If anybody might know and have a theory on that, maybe it'd be you, because you've seen them at from the inside looking out. So I'll stop there and get your reactions, particularly on my last question.
Okay. The one mistake here, or the mistake specifically when you're saying the buck should stop with O'Shea, it's one mistake. If you can identify another that's been made along those lines that I'm not aware of it off the top of my head. The Reinbold thing going on in Hamilton what I've heard, and early on both their halfbacks were injured, what I've heard with the defense that he's trying to implement basically is that it's too complex, that they are asking their guys to do too much too early in the season, and they're having a tough time latching on to it. This I know about Jeff Reinbold. I don't, you know, obviously as a special teams player, I've not been around him when he's a defensive coach. I do know that he is the best special teams coach that I had ever witnessed in my life, and Cameron, I think Bob Cameron would probably agree with that. The details of what he knew and the way he motivated the guys was superb. I think he's very knowledgeable defensively as well. It's just not coming together for him for sure, but it's, you can't really what's happening in Hamilton right now is a disaster defensively. There's no denying that.
Thanks for the call, Ron, on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Shaw, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Troy, I've got a question for you, man.
Okay.
I love football. It's the best team sport in the history of mankind, period. Now, here's my question. With the lack of imagination with offensive coordinators in the CFL, two wideouts because you have to have your ends covered, two slot backs, quarterback almost always in a shotgun position, one running back, maybe a fullback lined up somewhere on the edge of the offensive line. Can you please explain to me why, when it is perfectly legal to do so, everyone listening to this show right now, you're going to get a little history lesson here. You can, if your quarterback is lined up under the center, which you have to be to pull off this play, why isn't there any inside handoffs to guards and tackles?
The old guard around?
Huh. Period.
I ran the guard around in junior high. I did. Well, I didn't, but...
That's a great question.
Fumble Ruski, right?
Yeah, the old guard around where the center...
I thought you were going to go, like, you know, four or five receivers on one side of the field and all that sort of stuff. That's a... I don't have an answer for that. That's big-time running, smash-mouth type football. Maybe because the speed of the defense is now... If you're talking about pulling a guard, for instance, to hand off and come around and behind... Boy, that's a slow developing type play, right?
With it is with not. Listen, Troy.
That's the guard around. That's what I was talking about.
Linemen can rumble pretty darn quickly if someone's stealing their car. Now, if they're on the CFL football field with 20,000+ watching them play, you tell me that insert name of, well, if it was Walby back in the day and Stan or whatever. But anyways, who is going to stand up and tackle a 295-pound guard pulling with the ball, and he's coming just outside of all the down blocking from the right guard, right tackle, and the slot back all coming in. Who's going to be the guy that's going to want to tackle him? I think that's what it is, a gentleman's agreement that we're not going to allow offensive linemen to go rumbling downfield.
Maybe that's the case. I would think the interior D linemen who are, you know, 300-ish pounds, And even the outside guys, if they're 250, 260 sort of thing, they could come in low. Can you imagine the fun a linebacker would have, or maybe one of the outside guys would have, and you know, if you want to dish off to a guard or tackle, you pick your guy. Just imagine Chung, for instance, with the Bombers running that sort of a play, and imagine the guys coming in at his knees.
Travis Bond. Is he a guard?
He sure is.
Travis Bond. Put him
out there. 360 pounds of Travis Bond. You know how he's going to get tackled. It ain't going to be up high. So now you're offering up one of your most prized possessions in your O-line, where you're always concerned about depth and injury, and guys are going to have to naturally be coming and flying in from maybe the second tier of the linebackers, taking out Travis Bond at his knees. I just kind of think you want to stay away from that. Quite possibly.
We've seen, but
interesting.
We've seen O-linemen carry the football before, right, and fumbles and stuff. What usually ends
up
happening?
Graceful.
Something great. Something absolutely tragic usually ends up happening, and it involves two people getting injured and the ball once again finding the turf. I mean,
well, and to the point of trying to tackle a guy that big, the way you do it is you dive at his ankles. Yeah.
Big tree fall hard.
Well, knees. I'm going knees. You're going knees. Yeah.
This reminds me when John Oosterhuis was a defensive lineman, and he caught a touchdown. And then the next week, when I was in the room doing a story, he held his hands up above his head and walked around and said, "Watch the moneymakers. Don't touch the moneymakers."
Pretty sure he's got one more touchdown than Doug Brown.
Easy on the moneymakers. I got to go get a pedicure today, or a manicure, you should say.
Oost is a beauty.
Watch the Moneymakers. Interesting call there, Shaw. We appreciate it. Thanks for all the calls today and all the tweets and for you taking the time to text as well and to listen. Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber Game Day starts at 5:30 with Darren Bombing, Troy Westwood, Chris Walby. Kevin Hrushevsky has the Don Vito Roundtable at 11. Huss is back with the warm-up at 2. And then the afternoon ride with Husser and Paul Edmonds will take you to Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber Game Day at 5:30. Do not touch the Moneymakers. Easy on the hands. Somebody hold my chicken parm. He was always that's another thing about the room. He was always eating chicken parm naked. Who eats naked?
What?
In the room, he would pull out his chicken parm sandwich. He's like, how's it going today?
No chicken parm, mister.
Who eats naked in front of other people? It's gross. I'm worried about sanitary and all that. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.